other side, with no one to guide me, torn apart by a fiery wheel inside me.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Film Buds podcast. This is episode number 42 and my name is Henry.
Chloe.
And today, so we think Brayden is coming, or I'm hoping he is.
I'm here right now, actually.
Yeah, but we are joined by our good buddy, Cooper Murphy.
Howdy, how's it going?
So today we are going to be talking about quite a bit of different things, like Isle of Dogs. Then we're going to be doing a retro review of Hayao Miyazaki's Spirited Away from 2001. And then we have some trailers and some mail. Good bit of mail, actually.
Lots of news.
Correct.
The celebrity news is my favorite part.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, so thanks for joining us. My dog is trying to get out of
the worst start of all time.
I'm ruining Braden's everything.
When Braden's not here, it falls apart.
He's the glue that holds us together.
It's true, because Henry doesn't stop me from my tangents.
Yeah.
It just becomes...
Gotcha. Well, I'll try to play the role of Braden.
Thank you so much.
Until
Good
he
luck,
gets
Cooper.
Here.
Yeah, but Cooper, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a 6-foot-tall man. I have green eyes. I like long walks on the beach. No, I work with Henry and I work with Braden. A little bit of a renaissance man, you might say.
That's how I put it.
Yeah. I can make some latte art, and I can also serve. Yeah, sometimes, not all the time.
We're not all perfect.
Yeah, no, I mess up a lot.
We're not Rochette.
Yeah, he's great. But I can also serve popcorn. That's my expertise at the movie theater. But yeah, I work at both places, and I hang out with both guys and Chloe here.
Hello.
What's up, Chloe? And I'm really happy to be here and talk about some movies.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Thanks for making the drive and, you know, doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
But maybe what are some of your favorite films, maybe directors?
I really like Fellini a lot. My favorite film of all time is probably La Dolce Vita. But I also like a lot of like older Italian films from that like neorealist period. So like Antonioni, which I'll probably bring up in relation to Isle of Dogs in some way. Mm-hmm. I'll find a way. But I also like another director I like a lot who I'll probably bring up also.
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay, Transformers, Dark of the Moon is the only 10 out of 10 in my mind.
Yeah.
I really like Yasujiro Ozu a lot. And I think that Wes Anderson's got a lot of parallels to him, so I'll probably bring him up.
I just did,
so that's number one. Trying to think of other like, directors and movies and stuff. Like, I don't know, they'll come up, but I've been focusing a lot on just older classic films and stuff like that, but I also keep up with newer stuff, but
nice.
Maybe not as much as everyone else here, but I can hold my own.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
We're glad. Well, what's anything going on in your life these days?
Not much, you know. I am moving in July. I'm going out to L.A. Not for entertainment purposes, not going to Hollywood or anything. Well, I am
Pretty
going to
close.
Hollywood, but I'm going to law school out there. But I am super excited because the art scene in California is so cool, and in L.A. in particular. And we have there's a barista that used to work with me and Henry, and she's out in L.A. now, and she just texts me all the time seeing all these classic films in theater.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, yeah, Paige.
Yeah. Like, she saw, I really like Kar Wai Wong, Chinese director, and she, like, you know, saw a couple of his movies a few weeks ago and stuff like that. So they're showing stuff like that all the time, which we have a couple of theaters like that in North Carolina where we can see classic films, but it's not the same level as out there. So super excited about that. But in the meantime, hanging out, watching movies.
Playing video games?
Playing a lot of video games. Big gamer.
Yeah, big gamer.
I'm the gamer of the bunch, so...
Yeah.
Not much, but yeah, pouring coffee, hanging out with Henry, the coffee shop.
That's how we do it.
Shooting the shit, you know.
Yeah.
You know how it is, so yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Chloe, anything going on with you?
No.
Cool.
Yeah. Right on.
I don't think so.
Yeah, so
I showed you Timothy Chalamet kid, and was I right?
Oh yeah.
Yes. Spitting image.
Someone that looks just like him.
Yeah.
Timothy
Chalamet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man himself. I like that movie a lot, though. Probably more than Henry. I don't know if you like that movie.
Call Me?
Call Me by Your Name.
Oh, is she?
I don't think you liked it more than me.
No, she's a big fan. That's right.
She's like...
The book was better, but it's okay.
Yeah.
That was my classic one.
That was definitely one of my favorites of last year.
It's better each time you watch. Or it might just be
I've only seen it once, but...
Fair enough. But at first...
I feel like it would be.
The first time, I think it might have also been because I was comparing it more to the book. But as I distanced from that...
Yeah. I can't wait to watch it again.
It improved.
But I think I originally ranked that as like my third favorite movie of last year, but I think it's gone up to number two, maybe number one.
Wow.
Gotta give it that second watch, though.
Yeah.
The score's a lot... Well, for me, I didn't like the score the first time, and I appreciated it after that.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I'm not crazy about... God, I'm forgetting his name. The Come On, Fill the Illinois dude.
Garth?
No. What's the guy that does... what is his name? I don't know.
You overestimate us.
Take the time.
I'll think about it. Jesus Christ, I'm looking it up right now. Keep talking.
All right, well, you know, right, well, still... As far as we know, yeah, Brayden is coming, is on the way, and hopefully he'll maybe be here by the time we start the review for Isle of Dogs, which I guess is now.
The name is Sufjan Stevens. He did a couple songs.
Did he do the whole score?
No, he did a couple songs. I said. Yeah. Like the Ed scene.
And he did
Mystery of Love and Visions of Gideon.
Yeah, and he performed at the Oscars.
Yeah, and people loved it, and I thought it was no offense. Not my cup of tea. Yeah, people were like obsessed. I preferred Gael Garcia Bernal, obviously.
Yeah. No,
he's a hunk, man.
Yeah.
Jeez. And E2 Mama Tambien. I was watching that with my girlfriend. I'm like, this is like the most handsome man ever. She's like, no, he's not. I'm like, come on, chill.
I happen to agree. Yeah.
Cool.
There we go. Bonding.
Brayden.
Oh, so he is now on his way from Timberline, which is about 10 minutes.
Okay.
So, Brayden, more than likely, will be here mid Isle of Dogs review, I'm guessing.
We'll be coming in hot, too.
Yeah, coming in hot.
Coming in hot.
As you all know. So, I guess, unless there's anything else, we can jump into our review of Isle of Dogs. Is that cool?
I'm ready to rock, man.
You good, Chloe?
Yeah.
All right. So, let's do that. And we have a clip, so take a listen.
Okay, I got a question. What's your favorite food?
A double portion of doggy chop from the can mixed into a bowl of broken puppy snaps with a vitamin crushed up into it.
King's the spokes dog for that. He's the doggy chop dog.
Yeah, used to be.
Was that your daily meal?
Not always. My master was a school teacher. We weren't rich, you know. You?
A center cut Kobe ribeye seared on the bone with salt and pepper.
Wow.
It was my birthday supper every year.
Mine's hot sausage yakitori style. The snack vendor always saved me one on game days.
Hmm. Duke?
Green tea ice cream. My master had a sweet tooth. I probably inherited from her. You heard the rumor, right, about Doggy Chop?
Remind us again?
Brand. What rumor?
Oh, they folded.
Oh, no. Mm.
Doggy Chop folded?
How about you, Chief? What was your favorite food?
Me? Oh, I don't care. Garbage, trash, scraps of rubbish. I'm used to leftovers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I wasn't always astray.
Wait, what'd you say?
I said, of course, I wasn't always astray.
Really?
Tell us about that.
All right, so... Oops, all right. So Isle of Dogs is directed by Wes Anderson, and I guess written by as well. Stars Bryan Cranston, Edward Norton, Bob Balaban, Bill Murray, Jeff Goldblum, Scarlett Johansson, Greta Gerwig, Frances McDormand, Harvey Keitel...
Angelica Houston gets a credit as a mute dog.
Oh, Yoko Ono's in there, too.
Yoko Ono.
She's a crying scientist.
Yeah. And so the...
His name, I think, is Yoko.
Yeah. Yeah, that even really...
Right.
There you go.
It's like Wes Anderson can think of any other Japanese name.
Oh, she's Yoko.
Whatever. Classic Wes. So, the plot synopsis is, set in Japan, Isle of Dogs follows a boy's odyssey in search of his lost dog. So...
Perfect.
Cooper, do you want to start us off? You're the guest.
Okay. Do you just want me to give my opinions? You want me to give a little bit of a synopsis?
You do whatever is in your heart, man.
Okay. So first of all, I would like to clarify something. I listened to a little bit of the last podcast, and people predicted that I was a massive Wes Anderson fan.
You keep saying that. Nobody said that.
No, you can go back.
I think
it might have been Brayden. Doesn't really matter. But point being, I...
Hate him.
No, I don't hate him. There's a lot of Wes Anderson films that I really like. Royal Tenenbaums in particular is a really special film for me. It's It's one of my dad's favorite films, so we've watched it a lot together.
My cousin's in that.
Your cousin's in that. Mm-hmm. Does he play Ben Stiller?
No. Okay.
But I still think that's probably his strongest film, in my opinion, because I think...
You like Mr. Fox, right?
I do like Mr. Fox a lot. that's a really good one. But I think that Royal Tenenbaums like definitely balances like comedy and lightheartedness, but it's also
pretty
serious, and it's not... It feels like it's really meshed well together, and it pulls it off, I think, better than a lot of his other films.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so coming into this, I wasn't a big fan of Grand Budapest Hotel. I kind of felt like, I was talking to Henry about this the other day, but I kind of felt like that was almost a parody of his style. Like, it was just so Wes Anderson, like every shot.
It gets to the point of him like being so confident in his style that it's just like, he can't help but.
Yeah. And like, power to him, he has established this style that you can basically see any still from the movie and know, from any of his movies, and know this is a Wes Anderson film. So that's really cool that he's done that, but I mean, he's put out so many films, and for the style to really not change all that much, it starts to feel really iterative and kind of, for me personally, it kind of felt like he was in a rut a little bit. I mean, critically, all his films are, you know, reviewed really highly and stuff like that, so not everyone agrees, but I was kind of getting burnt out on his stuff. And I was hoping that this would kind of, I would find my love for Wes Anderson again through this movie. And I didn't. I still think I like Fantastic Mr. Fox better in terms of his animated stuff, but I thought that this movie kind of helped him find what made his movies great, but at the same time, like, he just didn't change it up quite enough for me to like want to like say I love the movie.
Right.
But I was definitely really excited about this one because, I mean, he has only done one other animated film with Fantastic Mr. Fox. So I felt like because he's only done one other animated film, like, it wouldn't feel as iterative. And this did feel really different than Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Like, yeah.
I would say that you could take any kid to see Fantastic Mr. Fox and they can appreciate it as like a kid's movie, but like, this movie
is pretty grim.
It's dark. Yeah, I mean, there's a kidney transplant.
Yeah. I mean, it's
which someone in our theater thought was hilarious.
Oh yeah, we'll get into a minute.
I have a lot to say about Chelsea Patron.
Yeah, in a minute we'll get into the guy who we had to sit with.
Sit
near.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's, I really liked the color palette of the movie. It was like, I really like the black, white, and red. I thought that worked really well.
Yeah.
And I liked the tone. Like, I thought that going in, I thought that it was going to be a little more lighthearted, but I liked that, you know, it kind of went all out with, like, it being a little grittier and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'll stop talking here in a second. I feel like I've been going for a while.
No, that's okay.
You're much better than I.
That's how we do it, so it's fine.
But there's certain scenes that I just felt like, okay, in particular, there's a scene in the movie with one of the dogs talking to a love interest, another dog. And it does this classic Wes Anderson like interaction between two potential love interests where it just feels like they have that stilted dialogue.
The monotone.
And I felt like that was...
You mean the one where he's drinking from the...
The nasty toxic water and she's on top of the...
Right.
And I felt like that was when I was watching, like, okay, he's still Wes Anderson. This is still a Wes Anderson movie. He's still kind of
never talked to a girl.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
He's fine. I don't feel too bad.
But yeah, and that was just kind of a reminder, like, he's still doing his thing. And it's fine, but I don't know. I think I need to sit on the movie more, watch it again. But I mean, it's a fine movie. It is really good. But if you are a lapsed Wes Anderson fan, I wouldn't say that this will be the one to bring you back
to convert you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, cool.
I don't want to go next.
No, I'll go. So yeah, well, I'm for the most part, a pretty big Wes Anderson fan. I mean, Fantastic Mr. Fox is one of my favorite movies, and I also really like Royal Tenenbaums and Moonrise Kingdom and pretty much all of them. But I completely understand the argument of it looks like another Wes Anderson movie. And mm-hmm. So if you don't like it because of that, that's fine. Ooh, Letterboxd email. But I mean, I really also, I was excited about the movie just because I'm I've lived with dogs all my life, and I'm a huge dog person.
I love dogs too.
And anything kind of like this, I'm totally in for. But I really like the movie overall. It's definitely pretty serious, like we had mentioned. And it's I would say that my few issues with it is it almost was oversensitizing at times. Like I feel like at times there's so much information and different end cuts between different like non-linear storytelling. At times that was a little much, a little jarring, but for the most part, love the animation. It's like just beautifully told or beautifully done. I love Wes Anderson's writing voice. Like I am a huge fan of the kind of dark, deadpan humor. I love all of that stuff for the most part. Overall, I really liked it. The score is awesome.
Oh yeah.
By Alexander Desplat is great. Voice performances, of course, are all good. And again, like that's, I'm just repeating like what you'd say about every Wes Anderson movie. But I mean, if you like it, you like it.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so it's, for me, that was enough. But yeah, definitely one of the more enjoyable, more inspired movies I've seen recently, even though it's would maybe still be in the middle of the pack probably right now of his...
Pun intended? Yes.
Correct.
Woof.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, now also, one thing I will kind of say about the movie is it's probably his most timely in terms of some of the themes and ideas that's bringing up about deportation and the groups of people being literally treated like they're nothing.
Livestock or something.
Yeah. Which is, of course, happening right now, kind of, but...
That's what I was going to say that I did this week. It's fine. We'll get to it.
Can I say something about the score really quick?
Yeah. Yeah, you can jump in whenever, man.
I don't know.
This is the least we've ever interrupted. I just did to you, but we're being polite because you're here.
One thing that I really like about Wes Anderson is you can tell that he's someone that like loves film, and he definitely like knows classic film and stuff like that. And I like how he puts in little homages to classic films and stuff like that. And one thing that I noticed when I was watching it, there's a scene in the movie. It's not even like really like a big scene or anything like that, but he inserts the score or the main theme from Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
Oh my god, that is so cool.
Yeah.
I thought
there's a lot
of
Kurosawa in this movie.
Yeah, and it did feel, parts, I wish that almost felt more like Kurosawa-y, but I really thought that was like really cool. I was like, oh my god, that's really nifty little move he did there.
I do like some of his direction in this in terms of like the shots, like when it's showing the boy and the dog chief traveling, or I guess it's maybe the group of them, and they're like these overhead shots of them going.
Yeah.
And some of these
it's in the trailer. That's a great shot.
And I loved all of that stuff. And I definitely preferred the dog stuff. Or dog's journey as opposed to some of the more political ones. But it's not like I was bored during that stuff, but I just wish there had been more of a...
I agree. I'd say that is probably my biggest complaint in the movie is I wish they focused more on the dogs. I wish that it was... Because it felt like there were pretty even split between the political type of... I don't know. I don't want to say espionage, but like the political stuff that was going on with the governor or mayor. Was he mayor? I don't know. Whatever.
Doesn't matter.
And then the dogs, and I just like wanted to see more of the dogs because I felt like by the end of the movie you really didn't know the individual dogs all that well.
Right.
Like I thought that it was gonna be, I hate to bring up Seven Samurai again, but I thought it was gonna be more like Seven Samurai where it's like you got to know each of them.
Yeah.
And all the dogs didn't really feel like they had like a distinct personality amongst each other.
I think part of that was that they were relying on the personalities of the actors. Like that was Jeff Goldblum was Jeff Goldblum, Bill Murray was Bill Murray.
Yeah.
So I think they were assuming that you were
because like in Fantastic Mr. Fox, there's a lot more, I guess it's a little bit smaller, but there's a lot more character development, really, you know, but anyways, well, Chloe, what'd you think?
Well, it was okay. It was good. I don't think I have the overall I appreciate him. I just am not as into Wes Anderson.
Doesn't appeal to you as much.
As everyone else in the room, I really like his aesthetic, but I don't think that's quite enough. Like, his storytelling's just not my favorite. I think if he maybe like tried to write with some people who weren't at his house like every day, like Jason Schwartzman, then it might be better because it gets more variety. But It was good. I liked the student, like the, obviously I like the girl, but like the student little protesting mission.
Yeah, I like that too, yeah.
I thought it all tied in fairly well. I thought it was, the pacing was a little weird for me, which might have been because they handled the different kind of sections very much sectionally.
Yeah.
But, yeah. As usual, the third act felt really long.
The third act, it was kind of like Ready Player One. It was just you're kind of waiting for it to wrap up. Yeah, so I'll agree with that.
Bryan Cranston killed it.
he's very good, yeah.
Who did the, was it Greta Gerwig that did the voice of the student?
Yeah.
I thought she was the weakest voice actor of the bunch. I was not convinced by it.
I didn't mind her.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say there's anything I loved about it. I just
don't think I liked that character.
I was about to
much.
Say I think it had to do with the writing of the character.
Yeah. Like, this is such a Wes Anderson thing. Like, she's, like, plotting out everything and, like, she's, like, doing all this research on the little pile and she's like, I think I have a crush on him. Like, bubble pops. Like, okay, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
that's a little too...
That felt a little forced.
Like, why do you have to, like...
I liked that. Sorry.
Oh, no, just...
Yeah, that happens.
Oh, I agree. But it just feels kind of in Wes... Looking back at Wes Anderson's movies, that just feels like... Gotta put that
well, that's
why
I'm saying I think if he tried writing with some other people who have other perspectives.
And the thing is, I think the funniest lines that I think probably Chloe would agree with is the dog who says, I love gossip.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just
Henry turned to me and said, that's you.
I just pick up things from all these different places. What can I say? I love gossip.
I love gossip.
Jeff Goldblum.
We should get into... We had this guy in our theater. Now, the theater was pretty much all... older people. It's just a bunch of white heads, really.
Yeah. Well, that's Chelsea for you.
Yeah. So, but there's this guy.
He was loving life, Henry.
A few rows in front of us. Yeah.
More life somewhere else.
Nothing personally against the men, but he was literally laughing hysterically at every single thing. Even if it wasn't even an attempt at comedy.
Yeah. Like the kidney transplant.
Like the guy was, when there's a kidney transplant and he was like, bursting out laughing. It's like, you know, and then like when the plane, the boy is trying to get back home and he launched, goes in the plane, just as it was starting, he started bursting out laughing. Like I was just like, dude, you're killing everything. But yeah. I'm glad he had a good time. So.
Like a really sincere stop motion appreciator.
Or maybe he's like the biggest Wes Anderson fan.
Characters move.
Yeah. It was a little much at times, but I'm glad he enjoyed himself.
We definitely have an audience issue at the theater that me and Brayden work at a little bit. We have I don't know, I'm not mean to sound down on it, but we have a lot of older people that come to our theater because it is a small theater.
Cooper hates old people. We've been over this before.
It's right next to Carol Woods, the
retirement home. Yeah. And,
but you're very nice to them.
And a lot, I am very nice to them.
Yes, I know. I just said that.
I don't know if you're being facetious or not, but
you always think I'm being facetious when I'm not. Yeah. I'm a nice person. It's just my voice.
But I remember when I saw Phantom Thread, which is not a comedy. There are bits in there that are played up.
It's much more serious.
I laughed out of nervous, I like funeral laughed.
Yeah.
It's a pretty unsettling movie. At time, so.
But I saw it with a packed house. Average age was probably 99.
I did too. Yeah.
And
wait, no, we saw it.
We did see it together.
We
saw
the same screening. Yeah.
And it was like the crowd was watching an episode of The Honeymooners or something. Like there's a pivotal scene in the movie. Nothing. The Honeymooners is funny, but it's funny in the same quote unquote funny in the same way that Phantom Thread is funny, which is just a man yelling at his wife.
That's
the whole
true.
Time. Sorry if I'm a little too.
No, that's okay.
But
that's
like there's a pivotal scene in the movie where, he's really yelling at his wife over, she's trying to do a nice deed for him, she cooks him dinner.
No, that was not a nice deed, Cooper.
No, she's trying to, this is before the poisoning.
No, I got it.
Anyway, she's trying to cook him dinner and all this stuff, and he just, blows up on her, and it's, really kind of this is a hard scene to watch. And people were cracking up, Kramer just bursts in the room or something.
Like,
I'm like, oh my God.
Your references are everything.
Yeah.
But I was just like, Jesus, that was
I think it might have people, especially in that demographic, might relate too much to having someone cook a resentful dinner for you.
I guess.
And then just yelling at each other. But
I don't know.
Classic baby boom mentality.
Those freaking baby boomers, man. One last Chelsea audience story. The movie The Square, it came out a couple months ago. I don't know. Do you guys talk about that on the podcast?
No.
Well, it's there are some comedic parts to it. Well, actually, this woman wasn't laughing, but there's a scene in the movie. It's a performance art piece where this man emulates the actions of like a gorilla. He acts like he's a gorilla.
Yeah, it's in the trailer. Yeah,
it's in the trailer. Which best scene in the movie? It's really good. But this woman had been talking throughout the whole movie, but during this scene, just for the whole duration of like the 10-minute scene, was just going, "Oh my god." Oh my god. And then like she would stop her saying, go, wow. Wow. Just like I was there with my friend and we were just looking at her like, what the fuck is this? So weird.
Maybe she was part of the movie. Isn't it about like maybe modern
that,
art?
Maybe that was the performance art piece and she goes to every screening. She's seen the movie 100,000 times. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was like the Isle of Dogs guy.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. They're planted in these little independent. Oh my god.
But it's like the federal agents on planes.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. But yeah, that's why we love the theater.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's little eccentricities, you know.
But I'm trying to think of... But yeah, I mean, of course, like, the animation is just so, like, detailed. That's what I love. And stop motion, I'm a huge fan of that.
Yeah.
And it's just so meticulous.
Yeah.
You know, and it's...
It felt really, like it was in a shoebox to me, though. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like it was like a diorama or something like that.
Well, no, like, well, fair enough. But like, small, I mean, like, contained, like, super. It didn't feel like a whole world me at all. It felt like very.
Which,
yeah, that's fair.
We're gonna talk about Spirited Away, where I think Spirited Away feels much more
expansive.
Broad and vast.
Yeah.
Where this felt really contained, and I don't want to say minimalist because there's so much happening on screen.
Right.
But it definitely feels like you're looking at this little.
Yeah.
You're looking in a shoebox, basically. And it, God, yeah, it literally looks great. There's one scene in particular that, do you guys like spoil stuff about the movie?
Brayden does, and that's you today.
Well, I mean,
so.
as long as it's not like a huge spoiler.
Okay. Yeah, this isn't a huge spoiler, but there's a scene where someone is preparing food.
The sushi scene?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Someone's preparing like a bento box full of food.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
It's just this guy, like literally cutting up fish and turning it into sushi and other stuff. For like a lunch,
I think
and
the guy was laughing at that too.
Yeah,
look how he cuts that fish.
That's a knee slapper.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that little? It's like a big thing online. It's like people preparing teeny food.
I think that
maybe.
This is what I contribute to the podcast.
Teeny food.
It's like super popular.
I may have.
There's like millions of videos of it.
No, I have seen this.
I'm sure.
And they put a little tea light candle in the little oven.
Definitely an inspiration.
Yeah. But that scene is so cool and so well animated.
Yeah.
Stop animation is just, I feel like I could watch anything in stop animation.
Yeah.
I love some Gumby.
Yeah.
Ooh, Gumby's the best.
Yeah, Pokey. He's a good horse.
He is a good horse. I had a little one horse named Pokey when I was small.
I wish they incorporated Pokey into this movie.
That's been dope. Bad. Every movie. Yeah.
Should have been in Ready Player One, you know.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. He could have been in there.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I even though of course I didn't really understand most of what he was saying, I thought the Japanese actor who played the boy was great.
Oh yeah.
Just in terms of him emoting like through a language that the majority of people.
He looks a lot like the character.
Oh, does he?
I think it was modeled after.
If the author or the people listening don't know, all of the Japanese characters in the movies don't have subtitles.
Yeah. Which is a cool touch.
Yeah. And it's not like there's just a couple lines of Japanese dialogue. There is scenes with people speaking Japanese with one another, and you can pick up what's happening with context clues and stuff like that, but
which I think is very nice to include. That was not very eloquent, but you know what I mean.
That speaks leagues about the animation
to the movie. Yeah, exactly.
That you can understand and follow a story.
It emotes different
methods. Exactly. And I think that if you're bilingual and you can speak Japanese and English, there's so much cool stuff you could probably pick up, because you know, I'd say that maybe a fifth of the movie or a fifth of the lines delivered are probably in Japanese.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's quite a bit. So it would be really cool to talk to someone that knows Japanese and could, you know, reveal a little bit more about it.
But I can bring some kids from my after school.
Yeah,
you guys want to see this really dark movie with me down the street?
Yeah.
And then tell me what happens all throughout.
Yeah, but it is PG-13, definitely for a good reason.
It's only the second PG-13 movie of the year, apparently.
What? No way.
No.
I can name.
That's what it said.
Ready Player One.
In the article. Maybe it was animated movie.
Well, it did premiere at a festival.
So there.
Yeah, maybe that, because, yeah.
Technically.
But, oh well.
I can't remember what I was about to say.
Rats. That's my goal
Rats.
In life.
Rats. Yeah. But yeah, and I really liked the relationship between the boy and the dog. I thought that developed really well. And you really, at least I really cared about that whole journey and that arc.
Yeah.
So that was definitely my favorite part of the character aspect of it.
One thing though, if you like cats and you're a cat person,
I was offended.
Yeah, don't see this movie. They really shit on cats.
I was offended to my core. No, not cats. Cat people.
Cat people.
Even worse. Well, or better if you really like cats, I guess.
There are a few little zingers.
Take the bullet, but
yeah.
I know the whole time I was watching, I was like, this is really rude.
We have an employee that works at the movie theater that loves Cat Sam. He loves cats but doesn't like dogs, and he's like, I don't want to I'm not excited for that movie at all. I don't want to see that movie at all.
Well, it's like him in general anyway.
Yeah, like, I bet it's because they don't like cats in that movie, but I don't know.
We do have more cats than folk in my household, but I still liked it. I also do like dogs though.
Yeah,
if you love one, you gotta love both. That's how I view it, you know.
Me too. Your dog's super cute.
Yeah, I do have a very cute dog. I wanted to like sneak him into the movie with me so he could watch. But
you probably could.
He'd love it. I know he'd love it. It's such his type of movie. One thing that I was thinking about is, have you guys noticed like severe negativity around Wes Anderson because of like his cult following that he's amassed? I feel like so many people immediately just are like, no, I don't like Wes Anderson, because like all these, like,
it's become like a fanboy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just know so many people, because I just brought Sam, because I know he doesn't want to see it, because he's like, I don't like Wes Anderson, because I think it's because he's amassed this huge cult following. I don't even want to say cult following, because he's pretty, you know,
pretty
popular,
yeah.
But I don't know. Have you guys noticed that?
I mean, I know Charlie, who works with us, is not a fan, right? I think.
I think he wants to see this movie.
Though. Yeah, I think for the most part he kind of...
Which is a healthy kind of disdain.
Yeah.
You should still be open to things.
Yeah. But I think for the most part he's someone who kind of... Which isn't just... I think just that's just not his type of film, which is fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess, but I don't think I run into that much. But to me it's just... There are going to be filmmakers out there, especially ones that have a distinct style that... Like Lars von Trier or...
Yeah.
I don't know who else, but...
Yeah.
Like, Harmony Korine.
Harmony Korine, yeah. One, definitely, who just completely write off whatever he does.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Because I can't afford more therapy for my nightmares, is why.
Yeah, you should... Don't ever watch a Harmony Korine movie, Chloe.
No. I'm a delicate flower.
Yeah.
Well, I've only seen bits of Gummo, and I don't think he likes cats very much.
No.
The bits that I've seen.
Not much of anything.
Yeah. A little bit of a nihilist. But,
yeah.
But another thing, though, I wanted to bring up is, do you guys feel that, I think we talked about it a little bit, where, and we brought up earlier, how, like, any still from Wes Anderson movie you can watch and, like, or you can see and be like, this is a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
Do you guys feel that, like, that's, like, a good thing, or do you feel like that's, like, too limiting for him?
Because I mean, I feel like there are certain filmmakers, like, even some, like, David Fincher, who I love.
Yeah.
Who I think, at times, or a certain point in their career, are getting, like, too comfortable and too confident with their own style, and so they like
stunt themselves.
They like it's to their own detriment, pretty much. Where they like, especially in Grand Budapest Hotel, where like everything is so symmetrical, everything is so colorful.
Yeah,
I live for it.
Yeah,
it's like a Kate Spade catalog, and I'm all about it.
Yeah, I mean, I like Grand Budapest Hotel, but just as an example, every character is so Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
That it's like, Jesus, like, dude, like,
well,
I want to see him.
You just want something a little bit different sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so even, like, David Fincher with Gone Girl and, like, Social Network, he's becoming so particular. Oh, here's Brayden. All right, so we're back. Sorry, we had, Brayden is here. He made it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so thank you, Brayden. I know everything's going wrong these days, but I appreciate you.
Yeah, it started last night too, because I went to my favorite bottle shop, and you know, this whole transition, the only way I'm getting through it is painkillers and beer. So I went to my favorite bottle shop and picked up some nice stuff last night, and getting out of my car, one of the damn things, they're 16-ounce tall boy in can, and one of the damn things fell off the plastic ring tabs and busted on the pavement. So
at least it wasn't your car.
That happened to me.
I would rather have had the beer than my car.
Oh.
I, you know, if I wrapped my car around a tree, at least my beer would have been fine. So
fair enough.
But yeah, so that was frustrating, and then all sorts of other issues today with crap, which I won't go into, but I'll just say I need more painkillers in beer.
Yeah.
That's the name of Braden's spinoff podcast. Yeah,
painkillers and beer.
I had this many Vicodin this morning.
And yeah.
I got left in an MRI machine this morning.
That sounds really? Like my nightmare.
Yeah.
That's a little claustrophobic.
Not ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well...
I just went to sleep. I, like, narcolepsied it. I just said, bye.
Bye. But, yeah, so Braden, we were talking about Wes Anderson's style getting maybe too... him becoming too confident in that. But, well, first off, tell us what you thought of Isle of Dogs.
I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, it's very rare that you see films with this sort of level of whimsy anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody takes themselves too seriously. And films that could have a sense of whimsy, films that could be really, really fun, I think are those who's, like Ready Player One, for instance, mm-hmm. right? There could be some whimsy in it, but it's just so sort of serious, like, ooh, adventure and ooh, excitement and ooh, virtual reality battles, right? In the Transformers. There's no Michael Bay whimsy, not there, no. Right?
Oh, there's whimsy. It's just not good whimsy.
Well, it's just stupid whimsy. It's like borderline racially insensitive type.
Oh, no, whimsy. Totally.
The best kind.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of films out there that could be imbued with a sense of whimsy, but very few of them have sort of the lighthearted fun that some of these Wes Anderson films do.
Yeah.
I mean, not all of his films, obviously, but Fantastic Mr. Fox, this one, obviously, and even his more serious films, every now and again, you get little bits, little nuggets of...
Wit,
cleverness, and you know, a little bit of whimsy. I'm thinking, you know, the shots with the fish towards the end of Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Love that movie.
Yeah
I do too.
With him for Halloween.
Our critics were kind of, bad.
I know, it's like everyone's least favorite.
Well, I think it's because it's so kind of, like, it's so a little unfocused, or not nearly as structured as the majority of his film. I think even at that point, something like Royal Tenenbaums was a lot more kind of Wes Anderson style, and then mm-hmm. this seemed to be, like, in terms of even, like, camera work, everything was little... all over the place,
mm-hmm.
a little, yeah.
And fresh, Henry.
Well, see, it's funny that you say that.
I don't know if it's overly fresh, but
well, it's funny that you say that. But then you're having a debate about Wes Anderson's aesthetic, his sensibility being a little too overbearing or overdone or a little rot at this point.
Yeah, and so I mean, I think Grand Budapest Hotel is too much Wes Anderson, and for me,
the word is extra.
Is too extra for me. and then, I mean, I really like Zissou a lot, so I mean, don't get me wrong, but mm-hmm. That's almost too little of what I like about Wes Anderson. And at times, I mean, he just plays as a kind of goofy adventure, which is fine, like, nothing wrong with that, but in terms of, I think, even just critics, how they viewed it, because that also, did that come before or after Darjeeling?
That came before.
It was before I thought Darjeeling.
Okay. That also is one of his movies that critically...
Yeah, so I feel like there was just like a part of his career where people were starting to give up.
The part I liked.
And then, well, I mean, yeah, I actually really liked Darjeeling. And then kind of Fantastic Mr. Fox on is Wes Anderson being Wes Anderson, really. You know, so...
Well, with Darjeeling Limited and Life Aquatic, I can't even remember... like the plots of those movies, but you just remember the characters. I just feel like definitely. He just makes these characters and just puts them in scenarios because, and stuff like that.
Because, like, Grand Budapest Hotel has so much plot and so many characters that it's like Jesus, man.
Well, that's the problem with his films. Everybody just apparently loves working for him.
Yeah.
So he gets these huge ensemble casts, because even if, you know, Grand Budapest, Bill Murray was in it for, what, a minute?
Yeah. He was, like, in the car. He's like, but hey, what's up?
Everybody just loves working with him. They love collaborating on his films and working with all the other actors, because he seems to attract so much good stuff. So people are like, 30 seconds, I show up and I say a line, and then I walk off the set? Absolutely. I will be on a plane tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll be out, you know. But, I mean...
They just want a brunch.
Yeah. I'd do it for brunch.
Yeah.
I would, too.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
But then, like, I even felt like Isle of Dogs, it was... It had too much plot. Like, I just felt like they...
Really?
Yeah, like, I just felt like...
I feel like
for what it was, it should have been simpler.
The dog journey is simple, and then it, like... juxtapose this super heavy...
I don't think it was complicated.
Well, it wasn't complicated.
But it's like, there's a lot of talk about plot threads.
Yeah.
It's like, you could follow it.
I didn't get that either.
You could follow it pretty easy, but it's like, I just feel like it's a big difference between the two storylines.
Yeah.
And there was a lot going on in terms of the story, but the thing about it is it was very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very... Well, their plot mechanisms that have been used a lot before. Mm-hmm. You know, the fake flu that he's putting in place, and you know, and all the political intrigue and that kind of thing. It's all stuff that's been done before.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he wasn't trying to be innovative with the film. The whole point of this film is it's just an homage.
Oh, I thought it was
so.
Well,
what
I liked it.
I like it too.
It's kind of. I was talking to this boy at camp. Timmy Chalamet boy, and he was saying that he was like, people never write books from the perspective, like, he was like, when the aliens come or whatever, you always see a perspective of the people, not the aliens, which maybe is not the best example here, so but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But like, so you saw both sides, you know, with the dumb.
Yeah. I
appreciated
it.
I think
it's well balanced because of that. It's just that
the plot was too complicated either, because you see, I thought it was kind of nice in that you see all the chaos and mess, mishigas, to use a Yiddish word, on the political side with all the, like, in power people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then on the whole opposite, you see the people or the beings they're affecting who are just trying to live their lives and be the best they can. And then you see the kind of middle ground between them, who are the people who are more over on the...
I agree with that, but, like,
on the affected side, but who are trying to help.
I think even just in terms of the editing, like, there's so much... like, it's almost like injects a lot of the plot in one story, and then in the other one, it feels much more character driven.
Yeah,
at least to me.
I don't know what's wrong with that though.
It just in terms of like how it's put together, it felt a little like, geez, all right, now we're here. Okay, but now it's going to be a super simple story. Now then, it jumps right back.
Yeah,
I mean, I liked everything going on in the human world, but it was just. I really preferred the dogs.
They were sewn together, though. This person knows and is affected directly by this person.
I don't have an issue with the connections. It's just...
Well, I mean, maybe the intent of that was to show that the dogs are these more sort of pure, simple creatures, you know, love, loyalty, as opposed to humans who are considerably more complex, but in their complexity are a god-awful mess and...
I just thought the movie was just shy, like 2 hours, right?
It was like
140 something. Yeah,
I brought up earlier, but I would rather just cut down on the human stuff, show more of the dogs.
Yeah,
I mean, the film is just like the art and the animation is so clean and simple, and like you were saying earlier, just like it felt like small, like a little diorama, and I just felt like it would have worked better if
I would have
cut some of it. It wasn't hard to follow, it wasn't confusing, but it's like. I just felt like they were cramming so much in there when I just would rather have more of a straightforward, you know, just like told story with these dogs and like have the human stuff, like have, you know, the exposition and things like that. But I just, every single scene with the humans, I'm like, I want to see the dogs.
Yeah. Like I just wanted maybe a little more exploration in the Isle of Dogs.
Yeah.
Like
island.
Well, I don't think they were trying to, glorify the circumstances by having a bunch of cute stuff.
No, but I mean, just in terms of they're just you seeing more.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be good stuff. It just I wanted to see more of it.
Confused me was the whole Tracy Walker and the pro dog resistance. And what was
I
that
liked
all
it.
About?
See, I like that too. Like I'm with
it
her.
Was dope. Life imitating art, imitating life.
It felt like a kind of a, if like I was because I was saying it felt kind of timely. To me, and I like that about it.
Yeah,
because he doesn't always do that very often.
Yeah,
dealing with kind of deportation and all these things. So,
One thing like I really like when films like create a space and you can understand the geographic like locations and stuff.
Yeah,
and I thought that the island itself, like I would have a better sense of that. And I feel like by switching back, like it kind of lost that.
Mm-hmm. Cause, and when it jumps back, you're like, all right, where are we?
Yeah,
now? You know, it's,
and. I feel like we'll start talking about Spirited Away in a little bit, but like I feel like Spirited Away would be half as good of a movie if half the time it was at the bathhouse and then the other half the time it's like, where's Chihiro? Like, yeah. Can't find her parents, you know? Like,
yeah.
I just, for something that is so whimsical, I want to see more like the whimsy. I don't like, I don't want to see courtroom type of stuff, like, or not, like, you know, conference room type of stuff, but.
But you guys were just saying that he was being criticized for being too in his own.
Well, no, niche. I said, his style. I was coming at it from it in terms of just like, literally like his framing, his aesthetic.
That's like all I like of him. Yeah. So.
Brayden, some other stuff about it?
I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought, you know, bits and pieces of it were convoluted, but not so complex as to be
hard to follow.
Yeah. Difficult to follow or off-putting or distancing or whatever. It's I don't know. It was just fun to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's at the end of the day, I think that was the intent of the whole thing. It was just fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I don't know. What I'm concerned about is people sort of transposing, superimposing all these weird interpretations on it. And that's sort of been my concern, is all these SJW critical analyses of the film. You haven't heard about all of this?
I mean, I've heard of... Well, we actually have a listener question about the portrayal of Japan in the film. And because, I mean, y'all know the scandal around this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, he's being called like racists, prejudists, and I'm getting a little insane, but we have a question about that.
Apparently, he's appropriating Japanese culture or something. Yeah,
which I really don't think so. Like we were saying before, I think it was Nomachi. It was very much like a 1960s Japanese movie.
Yeah. Because it feels, because like with homage, there can also be satire, but that doesn't mean you like hate that stuff.
It's just,
it's well rounded.
Yeah,
you know, so. Yeah,
you can't please everybody.
I don't get it. It's just
all white people getting angry. There's no Japanese groups getting angry at this. It's all white groups, you know.
Yeah, it's very strange. I don't understand it.
I don't mean to sound critical on the movie, because I really did like it, and it is a really enjoyable movie to watch, and it's one of those movies that it's a great movie to see in theaters. I feel like just for. Just the colors and the score is so great,
and just like the level of craft.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you can see that level of detail on a big screen, it's really fascinating. I mean, we talked about the sushi preparation scene, right?
Yeah, there. I loved all the little details, the strange little things that no other director would have put into the film.
Yeah,
like watching a sumo match in stop motion animation.
Right. Yeah, that's
a watching a kidney transplant in stop motion animation. Watching sushi preparation in stop motion animation. I mean, it's just little details like that which are so sort of charming. Again, it's whimsy. I mean, who else would think to put things like this in an animated film?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think there's a certain amount of overlap with that, with the Spirited Away, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
But it's just little touches like that, which are very Wes Anderson, but I like them all. I mean, I'm just thinking of Moonrise Kingdom.
My least favorite movie of all time.
Really?
Yeah. Really?
How do you
have that much? She hates the dog killing.
Hate it.
I love dogs, but
you're not supposed to like it, though.
Yeah, it's not like a cheering. All the kids are.
No, I appreciate. It's not one of those things where you hate the actor because they play a jerk. Like I didn't like it within the movie itself.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little abrupt.
I just don't. I don't think
he... That overall, one scene?
Overall,
I don't... Like I said, I like his aesthetic. I don't like what's underneath it at all. I don't think he is really too well-versed in... Well, that sounds really rude. Our perceptions of the human condition are very separate, and therefore I can't appreciate his writing that much.
That's it, yeah. That's fine, yeah. That's
well... That being said, I feel like Wes Anderson doesn't like necessarily see human interaction like that. I think it's like his stylized view of it.
Well, that's what he's putting out in the world.
But I mean, that's like, I'm bringing up Antonioni. I'm bringing him up. Antonioni, all of his character interactions in all his movies are so similar to Wes Anderson in the sense that like,
they don't interact like normal people interact with each other. Like, super stilted, really unaffected sounding, just kind of disinterested. And it's just done in such a, like, stylized, cool way. It's like, yes, these people don't act like that, but it's what you can glean from these types of interactions. Like, okay, there's, like, something to this. Like, what this means about, like, how we interact with humans. Like, yes, this is not how we interact, but, like, this has a meaning outside.
It's kind of like Terrence Malick. Like, obviously, I doubt
Oh, you know I love him.
I doubt he's going around like, oh my God,
the splendor of the world.
And he,
are you there, God?
He has flashbacks of his wife and his nature. You know, it's just... In the beginning, there was life. I understand the criticism of you just seeing one after another and just like that not meshing with you. But I feel like it is like... He knows every kid is not going to be acting like an adult, and every adult is going to act like a child. Although, of course, that does happen a lot nowadays, but...
I can attest to that.
Yeah. But, of course, it's like, you know, it's especially since it is so comical, it's just, he's doing his thing, and he's cool with it, you know? Bless his heart. But, yeah. Well, any other thoughts on Isle of Dogs?
I want a Wes Anderson Cardi B collaboration.
Who the hell is Cardi B?
Yeah,
who is
that?
She did that song.
All I know is that she's a rapper. But beyond that, I haven't the foggiest.
Technically, most successful female rapper of all time.
Even more so than Nicki Minaj?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Cool.
Those are factoids.
Yeah. Well,
good to know.
Yeah. Well, out of five?
3.5. But that's good. Yeah. For me, that's good.
I think I'm at a light 4.5.
Yeah, I was at a 2.5 prior to this, but our disagreement made me go up to a 3.5.
Oh, all right.
I give it 4. 4? I give it 4, yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, with that done, we can move on to our retro review of...
You didn't even talk about your disdain for the lady dog. Nutmeg.
Nutmeg.
Right, Cooper didn't like Nutmeg.
Well, not Nutmeg, just that scene. I did talk about that scene.
This is like the first time I've ever liked her in anything.
I had no issue with the character. It was just that one.
Ooh, careful. Yeah,
that one scene in particular between her and Chief. Felt like it kind of...
The beginning scene where the two of them first meet.
Yeah, when he's like drinking the dirty water.
Yeah.
I just felt like that was...
I did like the little lick, extra lick that he does after she says it's poison.
Yeah, that was...
I like that. Classic.
I just aired on the side of like the Grand Budapest Hotel type stuff where it just felt like almost like a parody of Wes Anderson.
Yeah, where it's like, you know, like in the montage in Grand Budapest where it jumps to every single hotel person and you're like, oh my God, he's so overly confident in this. He's indulging in that. But I mean, it's fine though.
Yeah, it definitely didn't affect my score of the movie whatsoever.
Yeah.
I'd have liked it better if there was like a duchess instead of a duke, but it's fine. Just one. That? Just one girl in the actual mix. Just one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Nutmeg.
She
was not Nutmeg.
Oh, Nutmeg, who can do tricks. Great.
She did some cool tricks.
Yeah. She juggled fire.
She bounced a 9-pound bowling ball on her nose.
Yeah, I can't do that.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Have you tried, Brayden? I believe in you.
Well,
face looks terrible enough. I don't need 9-pound bowling
ball. Oh, Brayden.
Brayden's a handsome
next
man.
Week, Brayden will come back. His like, nose is like...
Throw the medicine ball at his face.
Yeah. Okay.
Go over to CrossFit, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay, well, cool. Well, let's get into our retro review. And we have a clip for this one, too, so take a listen.
You shouldn't be here. Get out of here, now!
What?
It's almost night. Leave before it gets dark. They're lighting the lamps. Get out of here! You gotta get across the river. Go! I'll distract you. Just want to help you.
No!
All right, so... shoot.
Henry's ready.
So Spirited Away was released in 2001 as directed by Hayao Miyazaki. I don't know.
A King Amongst Men.
Yeah, should I read the Japanese cast, American cast? What should I do here?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm going to butcher all the Japanese.
He's American.
Yeah.
Braden could do it.
I'm reading about post-structuralism.
He's busy. Just kidding.
DeVee Chase, Suzanne Pleshett.
Is this the American name?
Yeah, these are for the dubbed version, yeah. Suzanne Pleshett.
And that's it.
Yep, just two characters.
Yep.
No, I really wish Billy Crystal was in it.
Yeah.
Who's Billy Crystal voice?
He's a little... I said I wish he was in it. He's a little fire. I'm related to him, too, by marriage.
Really?
Yeah, he's my... Well, he's my dad's cousin by marriage. Oh. And then not, and then again.
Have you met him?
No.
No.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I've met people.
Yeah, one of the few celebrities she hasn't met. But the plot synopsis is, during her family's move to the suburbs, a sullen 10-year-old girl wanders into a world ruled by gods, witches, and spirits, and where humans are changed into beasts. So this one is definitely a pretty, I'd say, a kind of a fan favorite of
everyone
of Miyazaki fans. It's actually not my favorite, I'll say.
I think everyone's seen it, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like when people talk about Miyazaki, that's the one that they mention.
Yeah, because everyone's seen it.
I mean, that one or Mononoke, yeah. I think, for hardcore fans, probably Mononoke is the
Totoro.
First, well...
Everybody loves Totoro. No
Totoro was Sorry. Way back when. I mean, people do love
people
it.
Still, you know, the office display at Allen's, we have like a whole Totoro display, and people
Everybody's smacking their mics today.
They love it.
I like Porco Rosso, too.
Porco Rosso is
one of my favorite ones that he did. Yeah. I mean, all of his films, I think, are just
House Moving Castle is my favorite.
Yeah, House Moving Castle. He did Lupin Castle of Cagliostro, I think.
Yeah.
The Lupin one.
Wind Rises and Nausicaa.
Nausicaa, the Valley of
Wind. Grave of the Fireflies. The Darkest of All. Was that him?
No, he didn't direct that.
The guy actually passed away.
Yeah, he just died a few years ago. Director.
Just trying to bring him into the conversation.
That wasn't Miyazaki. No.
I guess not. Okay.
It's the co-creator of
Ghibli.
Oh.
And he did that, and then My Neighbors the Yamadas, I think, is the name of it.
Yeah.
And then a couple more.
You don't like Howl's Moving Castle?
No, it's fine. It's just of his other ones. I don't know. That's probably my least favorite.
It has an issue that I'll say is kind of one of my issues with the movie, but Cooper, you were saying to me that this was like one you kind of grew up with.
Yeah.
Well,
this was a wildly hugely successful film.
Yeah.
I was just looking at it the other day, and it's got something.
It's one of the highest grossing movies in Japan.
Yeah. Well, it's considered one of the best film, like the fourth best film of the 21st century.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I mean, I'll say I actually wasn't even really exposed to Miyazaki movies until about 3 years ago. Like, I didn't see any until I was in college.
I have suspicions
that you were like in a cult.
I was. Yeah.
Hillsborough.
Fair enough. Or in high school.
Yeah. I kind of grew up with them, actually, because I remember, you know, when I first got into anime back in high school, there was My Neighbor Totoro and Kiki's Delivery Service.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember some of the other ones. I mean, obviously, those were more for a younger audience.
Yeah.
And I was into all the action
adventure
stuff.
Good films are for everyone, Braden.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing is as I started to mature, I began to realize how awesome his films are. And, I mean, he's got some really spectacular ones out there right now. The Wind Also Rises.
That's
I really need to see that. Now, he got into a lot of trouble in Japan for that one.
You haven't seen that?
Nope.
Really?
It's historical. I mean, it's not...
I know. It's tremendously relevant
and
important. Mm-hmm. And I really, really, really need to see that. But... life has a funny way of cutting you off from the very things that you want to do.
Yeah. Like
working at a movie theater and not actually being able to see movies.
Man.
Go figure.
Bye,
go
everyone. Figure.
It's kind of like a gift of the Magi, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
That was like my favorite story when I was little.
Yeah, it's a very clever story. Anyhow, what the hell was I saying?
We don't know. How much you like...
But yeah, as I've grown up, I've really gotten to appreciate a lot of his films and, you know, all the stuff, even, you know, the sort of seemingly children's films. I think, you know, there's a lot of much more relevant, more salient themes that run through a lot of his films, particularly you know, I was thinking about Princess Mononoke, and then I was also thinking about Spirited Away. I'll get to that in a second when we talk about some of the themes in the film. But
I watched both of them several times in school.
Yeah, really? I love both of them.
Yeah,
they're both. That being said, there are some faults, there are some flaws, but I think they're just outstanding, fun films.
That's how you feel about me too, right? Yes.
She's got her faults. She's got her flaws.
Thank you, Cooper.
Can't complete the rest of that. But yeah, like you were saying before, I kind of grew up on this movie. It came out that like sweet spot for me. It came out in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
That would put me at 8 years old. And
yeah, that was like Lord of the Rings for me.
Yeah.
That time. So yeah, I think I was too busy watching all those.
Yeah. My dad was like pretty hip with movies and stuff, so he showed me a lot of like good movies, and he introduced me to this when it came out. We saw it in theaters, and it just like immediately became like my favorite movie. And it was one of those movies that I could sit down and just watch over and over and over. Like when you're a kid, you know, you just watch the same thing over
you're
and over.
You're talking to the right people. I did that this weekend, Cooper, so let's not attach an age to it.
Which is funny because I never really do that now. Like,
yeah,
some of my favorite films I've only seen once.
Really?
Yeah, I just feel like a lot of times watching movies over and over again, it kind of lose their luster a little bit.
There's a period where I watch Fury Road many times.
Yeah.
I saw it a few times. I wasn't like... a weekend I watch it five
yeah.
times.
Are you making fun of me now? Henry knows I did that this weekend. I'm not proud of it.
No, nothing against people doing that.
Yeah.
But that would be one of the few films I watched somewhat frequently more than others.
There's also less dialogue in that too, might be part of it. It's a little less weighty in that way.
Yeah.
But Fury Road is like it's probably my top 20 movies of all time. I've only seen it twice. So but anyway, so I kind of grew up on this movie, which when you're a kid and you watch stuff like this that has like that whimsy or, you know, mystical type of feel to it, it's like times 10 because you're just a kid and, you know, like everything just seems so much more amazing and stuff like that and grandiose. So it really connected with me when I was a kid. And I brought it up earlier, but something that I love and absolutely love in movies is when you know a place and they establish a place and you get a good feeling of where things are in this place and stuff like that. And I think that Spirited Away does that so well. Partially because the movie is pretty much just confined to the bathhouse. But something that it also does that I think Mad Max does really well too is it drops you in a world and it puts you in, you know, Mad Max is spread out across Fury Road.
But you know exactly where everything is.
You know where things are, but it also just gives you little glimpses of things outside in the world, so it just kind of gives the illusion of it being so much bigger,
and it is so simple too.
Yeah,
it's like, I mean, in terms of what you're showing, like here, that's the, I guess it's the Gaslands or something.
Yeah, Bullet Farm. Yeah,
to the left. Yeah, Bullet
Farm.
And
you don't even see them. It's just the reference enough is enough to give you this illusion of you know the geography around.
I'm hoping for that sequel, man.
Yeah, I would.
They have like two written or something.
I would kill for that.
Yeah.
But like in Spirited Away, you know, in the beginning of the movie, right after she gets transported to like the spirit world, she goes back to where she came from to, you know, go back to her car, and there's like a big pool of water, and across the river is like a little town.
Yeah.
You know, and then like later in the movie when the seas kind of come up, like you can just see little, like when she's, I think one of the best scenes in the movie is when she's riding a train.
Me too. It's my favorite scene.
Yeah, that's such an eerie, unsettling scene.
That's probably my favorite scene. And it just shows the little stops. And there's one shot in particular that just like, I almost tear up when I see it, is when they just go by this little house. And it's just on the island.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's almost like the train scene in The Wind Rises.
Yeah.
Where I guess right after where there's the earthquake.
Yeah.
That's so unsettling.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's so cartoony.
Yeah.
And that whole train ride is great too. Yeah.
I have a little still of that house on my wall.
Movies on trains. Love them.
Snowpiercer.
I think we all love Snowpiercer, actually.
I've never seen Snowpiercer.
You haven't?
Oh, you
really like it.
But I hate Okja so much.
No, really like it, no. I think.
Okja was awful, but Snowpiercer was actually quite
really
good.
I'm going to borrow your copy when I leave. But just the world it establishes, and all the characters are like, you don't know any of the characters, but it feels like they've been existing there forever.
Yeah.
You know? And there's just so many characters. Like, I was thinking, there's that big, fat, white guy that has the red salad bowl.
I'm pretty sure That was supposed to be a daikon radish.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a radish.
If you look at him, he looks exactly like a daikon. They're just like giant, big tuber things with little white sprouts, and it's the it's a common part. They grate it up. It's a common part of pretty much every Japanese meal ever. And so it's kind of, I mean, it's a very obvious reference to Shinto, which is, you know, the ancient strictly purely Japanese sort of form of. It's not really a religion, but thought system.
Yeah, it's almost like Buddhism, where it's not really
a religion. It's not really a religion,
but it's a life,
but it is,
style type
of
thing.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of Shinto stuff. Like they have the red gates in front of the bathhouse, and
gates, I mean, part of the whole belief system of Shinto is that there is a spirit that resides in everything.
Yeah.
And so the bathhouse, just so everybody knows, the bathhouse is a place where all these spirits that reside in all these things are able to sort of get away and get clean before they go back to their place of permanent residence and that kind of thing. So it's a really, really fascinating concept. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And just a lot of references to Japanese mythology and Shinto mythology in the film.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun to watch. And he had the big giant daikon radish and a haku. Haku, of course, was the spirit of a lesser river, but then the spirit that Sin cleans at one point is the guardian spirit of a greater river.
Yeah.
And so, you know, immensely big, powerful dragon.
Yeah.
And it's just that's so cool.
Yeah.
So it was just a lot of fun to watch that, just kind of geek out because of my experiences with Japanese culture and stuff.
But it is really cool that they have all this mythology like imbued in the movie. And even if each of the individual characters is not attached to some actual part of Japanese or Shinto mythology, it feels like he's created this world and he has created his own mythology, you know? Yeah. And
well, that's the thing is he took, I was reading some about this and he took bits and pieces from mythology. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very obviously referenced, but it's not just straight. He added on a lot of things. He created a lot of things. The whole concept of this bathhouse, sort of a vacation spot for these Shinto spirits, is that's purely his creation.
Yeah,
it's kind of like Del Toro with Shape of Water and Pan's Labyrinth, where he kind of takes little bits and pieces and then
weaves it into something entirely new.
Yeah. But it's almost like hard watching this movie to believe that like this is he created all of this, you know, like this is something that
he didn't
in the sense that
he
like
glued it all together
that, like this is it almost feels like it could exist in another, like this is Spirit Away 3 or something like that, you know, like it feels like something had already been established, you know, in this universe. And then I don't know, and then that's not even talking about the animation in the movie, which is all hand drawn, you know.
It's great. Yeah.
And I mean, if you're watching carefully, you can see, I mean, it's a little jittery because, you know, each individual frame is hand drawn, and you can like, it just looks so good.
Yeah, you can see the work.
Yeah,
kind of like an Isle of Dogs,
you know? And where Isle of Dogs almost like there's a lot going on screen Isle of the Dogs, but they have, you know, a few characters on screen, a few set pieces. But, like, any shot from Spirit Away, there's a million little details. You know, like, there's a scene where she's running down some stairs inside the bathhouse, not the scene where she's on the exterior. And, like, in the background, there's someone getting their... I never noticed this before, but there's someone getting their hair cut. And then there's, like, people carrying things of food, and each food, like, piece of food is, like, meticulously drawn. And it's just, like, where Isle of Dogs almost feels, like, minimalist, and what is on screen, this feels, like, maximalist. You know, like, he's just putting everything on there. It's just
because it is so like good. I mean, I keep on bringing up The Wind Rises, but it's like it just shows you Japanese culture, you know, just like, and so you'll pass by a room, someone's just doing something so simple, but it's a detail,
yeah,
and it's so good. But
yeah,
well, Chloe, you haven't said much. Are you is this your what's your opinion?
Yeah, I like it. No, I really like and appreciate all of his movies.
Yeah.
And as you know, I do like to doodle on the reg, and I like grew up making little stop motion movies and stuff.
What's your favorite of his? Would it be this or?
Nobody listens to me. Anyone? No. Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh, yeah, you said that's what I like.
Lordy.
Oops. See, My least favorite is probably Castle in the Sky.
I like Castle in the Sky.
Oh, I like it, but it just...
It is, does feel a little more empty, though.
I really like Howl's Moving Castle, and it actually reminds me a lot of Mortal Engines, which is coming out in December. The Peter Jackson... All right. Jackson,
okay.
No, I mean, in a cool way. No, I mean,
the concept is similar.
And just the visual. But the one issue I have with Miyazaki and just kind of Ghibli films in general is at times it just feels a little too long-winded.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are certain sections...
But there's so much to, like, bask in.
I agree, but they're just in terms of, even I think in Spirited Away, the last 25% or so feels, like, unnecessarily, even just the pacing feels extended.
For me, that's like almost every movie, but at least in this one, there's stuff to occupy.
That's
right.
Well, the way you're putting it is almost the exact opposite of how I view it and kind of the problem that I have with it. It's like the first two thirds or the first three quarters of the film, he spends so much time setting up the story and the mystery and the plot. And I have no issue with that. It's beautiful, and it's this very rich world, this very rich environment, and you really get a sense of the disconnect, the disjuncture, the break in reality that Chihiro's dealing with. And, you know, sort of her parents turn into pigs, and all of a sudden she's in a spirit realm, and she's got to work, or else she gets fed to the pigs or something. So it's... you really get a sense he spends a lot of time building up this sense of disjuncture, unreality, creating this really remarkable world, the bathhouse and everything else around it. And then the resolution of the film is like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just everything just wraps up, done.
Yeah.
And you're kind of going, but there's no, I mean, it's almost as though there's nothing for her to overcome. Everything just
what?
I did notice that more this time watching it. And I love the movie. Like I said, I've seen it probably more than I've seen any other movie. But the pacing is a little weird. Like,
yeah.
It does kind of drag in weird spots, and then it speeds up in other spots.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it drags for like almost the entire first two-thirds of the film drag. Like the first hour and a half of the film sort of drags. Which I don't mind, because he sets up... And there is stuff for her to overcome, but it's all the difficulties that she faces are earlier in the film, and they sort of, you know, up and down and up and down and up and down. And then it's not as though anything that she did specifically,
she elects to be effortful throughout the movie, which everyone else is just like gorging themselves on random and crap and not paying attention. Stuff like that.
I've been there.
In that way, it's very similar to Isle of Dogs, because there's a lot of allegory. And
that's my point.
And I don't think, and you don't often see a character, much less a female character, who like becomes self-aware midway, and then it works out. Mm. Which I think, especially in a kids' movie, I think it's
definitely.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I was curious about, is whether this was intentional on his part, or if there's just a difference in terms of how things are structured.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of in Japan versus Western structures of story structures.
Well, there was a...
Which is something that I feel I should know, but it's, you know, it's very strange. Because everything, the resolution, the overcoming of all these obstacles and difficulties that she's faced with, it's all very subtle, and it has to do with the choices that she makes rather than proactive.
I think it's about growing up.
Yeah, rather than proactive, like, I'm going to go get the spear of sauce, blah, blah, blah.
Which I appreciate.
Stab the evil spirit, and then, you know, and so the end of it, rather than there being sort of a climactic face-off, there's not like an apex of action. Or
she just
like
keeps
that.
Going.
It's just she just keeps going, and she makes some choices, and the choices that she makes touch everyone around her.
Yeah, it's smooth.
It's very subtle.
I mean,
but then that's the problem, is because it leads up, there are all these subtle things. The last 15, 20 minutes of the film is just done.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's how kids live their lives anyway, though.
Maybe.
I think it's kind of like that thing that can happen with certain characters where there's development through the first half or through the first, like, 60%, and then the rest is them just being that. Mm-hmm. And just in terms of the pacing, can be a little strange. Like in don't know why I thought of this, but in Beasts of No Nation,
mm-hmm.
there's the first half is really dealing with the boy's journey to becoming a child soldier. And then the last half is him being that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just that kind of midway point where you're so into seeing him develop that you just want to see that. And then this, it's kind of where she's developing. And then it's her pretty much just being that character and her wandering in that state. And so it's not that that's really a bad thing, but just in terms of pacing and interest in the character specifically. That occasion, I don't have a huge issue with that. I really like the movie, but that it's a little issue for me. And in Howl's Moving Castle, it feels a little long-winded for the story that it's telling.
Yeah.
Even though I really like it. So. That's all I got. So. But yeah.
Yeah. Great
movie.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. I will say that.
You can write lots of college papers on it.
Yeah. I'm sure there have been.
Lots in there.
Many have. You know?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful movie. I just enjoy watching it. Yeah. I enjoy the animation style. I like the subtlety of his films. I think, you know, this one in particular is such a wonderful children's film because, I mean, the most sort of distressing or complex things that she has to deal with. I mean, you know, you do have the scene where Haku is pretty badly beaten up.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really see much violence.
Although violence.
Well, the bits and pieces where No Face is running around eating people.
Yeah.
But it's not eating, it's more just sort of swallowing, like he envelops them in darkness and then that's it. But it's sort of strange because it's very obviously children friendly, but at the same time there's some strange, eerie stuff going on.
Yeah.
So and it's kind very of like heavy original. On the
what's up with that big baby?
Heavy on the
Yeah. Giant pudgy babies.
It's like the baby from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
It reminds me of there's a similar, like that baby lives in a big dome, and in Akira, I don't know if you, have you guys seen Akira?
Yeah, no, obviously I've seen Akira. That was the first sort of big, you were talking obviously. About watching films over and over again as a kid.
Bonafide banger of a movie. Yeah.
That was what I
love that movie. Just picked up the Blu-ray.
That was sort of like
someone's watching this man. What's up with that big baby?
What's up with that baby?
The guy in Isle of Dogs.
Yeah, he would have loved the baby.
Oh, he would have, yeah. He would have.
But in Akira, one of the children, the like telekinetic children, lives in a big dome similar to the big baby. So I wonder if it's the same baby. I wonder if he
grew up. No, but that was like a giant baby, and that other dude was.
He could have just kept growing.
Like all the psychics had like progeria or something. They were all children, old, but they were all real little Benjamin tiny Bunn. Shriveled.
Cinematic universe.
Yeah, same cinematic. Oh, man.
Yeah. And do y'all prefer Miyazaki films that are more fantastical, or do you prefer when he's more grounded in reality?
I'm always fantastical, as you know. Probably as fantastical. You know.
I mean, I love The Wind Rises. I need to watch it again, because
I need to watch it at all.
I have the Blu-ray if you want. I think I do.
I saw it when it came out, and I just don't remember a lot from it, but I remember really liking it. But one of his, I mean, I really like Porco Rosso. Sorry.
Who don't?
And that's, I mean, obviously, I mean, it's a pig man, so it's pretty fantastical, but at the same time, it's based in reality.
It's magical realism.
Yeah, I mean,
my favorite genre.
It's, you know, it's a story about fascism, you know, versus communism, and it uses this pig. Communist pig as a.
So funny how he puts these really wacky, complex. The Wind Also Rises, I think, is his most blunt.
Yeah grounded, as it were.
Well, yeah, I mean, but most sort of blunt. Address of issues, like topical issues, political issues, and so forth. I mean, that was the thing, is Mononoke is, you don't see it. I mean, well, it's not, it doesn't advertise the fact, but it's very obvious that
it's industrialism versus nature.
Industrial versus nature, and the issue of sort of ecological, environmental degradation.
Yeah. Well, this one's not otherwise. It's about consumerism and
In a part, but this also, it also has a pretty significant passage in the film, or scenario in the film which deals with ecological,
the river. Again,
environmental degradation. Yeah, where the river spirit comes
apparently,
in.
Apparently, he actually found a bike in a river cleanup, and he said, I'm going to put that in my movie.
Wow.
That was a common thing you see in Japan, because actually they put pretty huge cement concrete embankments along various rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd be walking along, and you'll see a river wandering along, and just all sorts of just random detritus down there. And more often than not, you saw a bike. I mean, not bikes different are in ubiquitous. Hillsborough,
as former secretary of the environmental club for my high school, very similar.
Mention bikes.
Yeah. Oh, one thing that's, I would say, is kind of not that noticeable in this, but it's very clear through his, most of his movies, is his love of aviation.
Oh,
you know,
he
like
loves his planes.
Yeah.
Yeah, big
like
plane.
Poco Rosso is all about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, my dad was a pilot, so I kind of have a fondness for...
Really?
Yeah.
And wow. For you're flight. Not a fly boy yourself?
Maybe one day, man.
Maybe you'll do a chicken run type of thing, take some stuff in the backyard. And...
No, my dad was, when he was, I think, 17, he already had his license.
Really?
And he was starting to teach.
Think people. He can do a bear roll?
He may have been able to, but...
Sorry.
No, it's okay. But... Yeah, and so I kind of have a fondness for aviation, but I love whenever that's injected into his movies. One of the reasons why I love Wind Rises, because that's literally what it's about.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's like designing planes.
Yeah, about the guy that created either the Zero, the Mitsubishi Zero, or the engine that went into the Mitsubishi Zero.
I think it was the plane itself.
Was it the plane itself?
Kind of all the bits and pieces.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he got into huge troubles. This guy's held in high esteem, sort of as a national hero in Japan, and Miyazaki portrayed him as a somewhat conflicted individual in terms of...
He was sort of a pacifist in the movie.
Yeah.
And, that movie is... There's the whole tuberculosis stuff going on. His wife gets tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like Spielberg with his kind of clear love or passion for World War II. History and technology.
Yeah.
There's so many of his films where he injects that somehow, and you can just see that not always a fondness for what's going on, but a understanding.
Appreciation.
Appreciation of it. So it's definitely how it is in this. So.
It's interesting. Miyazaki always seems to have some sort of flight.
Yeah.
Flight is always a big part of his films. Like Yubaba flies around, and then you've got Haku flying, and Chihiro
brooms
flies along. Kiki's delivery service.
I prefer
service.
Houses that can transport us. My
Neighbor Totoro, the giant flying cat bus thing.
Yeah.
Right? So, and then Porco Rosso is all flight. And then Wind Also Rises about a guy that makes an airplane. Yeah. So, it's
people
interesting.
Just straight up living in the sky.
Or people just straight up, what was that? Well, Nausicaa Valley of Wind was also a lot of flight.
The wind.
Yeah,
the wind, yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, that's I guess, a common theme. I don't know why flight being imagination, fantasy, perhaps, being able to get your feet off the ground and escape from reality for a little while.
Yeah.
JetBlue or Delta should hire him to make some commercials or something.
I think Southwest or Virgin would do it.
No,
why are you pointing at me?
No, I thought you were going to say it. No, I swear he was actually involved or some of his characters were used in a campaign for an airline.
Really? A Japanese airline?
Maybe.
Yeah.
It could have been JAL. I don't know.
Huh.
But.
Cool.
Cool. Well, all right, well, unless there's anything else, out of 5 stars for Spirited Away?
86 trillion.
That's quite a few.
I rarely give out the 5-star. I'm on my first podcast, already giving out 5-star.
That means 86 trillion.
Like I said, I was raised on this movie. You know, this was, it's just a classic. It's
4.5 for me.
Yeah, 4.5 for me as well.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so I guess we can, with the reviews done, we can move on to a little bit of news. Chloe... What's you going?
You hear about T.J. Miller?
I was just about to say that.
What the heck?
Yeah. T.J. Miller?
Not good.
The thing with where he battered the taxi driver, I was like, that's obviously bad, but I don't know what happened. And I'm like, oh my God, how could you do this?
He's been arrested for calling
bomb
a fake
threat.
Fake bomb threat.
What the heck?
Seriously?
Yeah. Why?
For March? What the hell?
This is just coming. He did in March. I read today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I
don't know if it's just coming into the public's eye right now or what the deal is.
Sure,
I mean, what is he doing?
Imploding.
I mean, what is he doing in terms of drugs that he's doing?
It's very odd. I'd also like to mention, even this is a little whatever, He's like a voice actor. I feel like he should have known not to do it. They can track him.
Yeah.
If true. You're in the Emoji Movie, don't call in a bomb threat.
Of course,
yeah. Brilliant movie.
Yeah.
That was severe, though. Isn't that great? Why would you? Why, well, I mean, why would anyone do that?
He's always seemed like an asshole to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's not. Why did he do that? I mean, what compelled him to do that? Why did he wake up one day and decide, I think I'll phone in a bomb?
I read the article this morning, and he was on another train. He was on another train, and some passengers reported that he was just being really belligerent and was yelling at other passengers on his train. And so he was really drunk.
Classic TJ.
So he's like really fucked up. And during this period, he called in a bomb threat on another train, said a woman had a bomb in her bag. And then, you know, they called a bomb squad in. They stopped the train. It was like really late at night. Everyone had to get out. It was like March in New York. So it was really cold. Everyone had to wait in a parking lot. And we just held up the train for hours. Four different women were interviewed about this, were interrogated, rather. And, yeah, it was just fake claim.
Jeez.
He's an ass.
Rude.
Yeah.
He's not even a good actor. Deadpool, not a good movie.
Brayden, I like it. I like it.
You'll
never
know
Miller's
joy. Yeah. You won't know true joy until you watch Brayden watching a Deadpool anything. It's so funny.
I mean, I like him in Silicon Valley, and I've liked him in a few things. I wouldn't say I'm a huge...
he's just one of those people who's there. He's just so utterly disposable in terms of his roles and what he does.
Yeah.
I mean,
regardless of his abilities, it's an awful thing to do.
It is. But that's terrible. There should be
extreme lack of appreciation for your life.
Yeah. What the hell was he thinking then?
I can bring the mood back up.
Man. Yeah.
I mean, was that it? He was drunk? There should be criminal charges against him.
Well, there was. He had to pay $100,000 in bond.
Well, I mean, he's been arrested, and it's the maximum sentence is 5 years in prison. So, yeah. I mean, he could
He paid for
bail and got out, but it was a shit ton of money.
Oh, well.
So.
Story of America.
There you go. Yeah.
If you're rich, doesn't matter.
Seth Meyers' baby was born
I heard about that.
Yeah,
on that train?
That's cute.
No. All the panic induced induced his wife into labor.
Yeah. TJ was just looking at
the baby has the bomb. Okay.
That big baby.
Seth Meyers' baby is the big baby.
Yeah. But yeah, so
giant baby.
That's your little current events. I know what's going on, but we can
I have other news. Kinda. It's relevant.
Do we want to hear it?
It's not about the baby. It's not about like a Kardashian. It's cool. I promise.
Okay.
I would have already been done by now. I saw Saturday I saw an early screening of Sorry to Bother You with the director.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty cool. It was a very weird movie. And I asked some questions, but I'll save that.
You were sitting next to an anti-Semite, right?
I was. Thank you for bringing that up.
Whoa.
It was very upsetting. I moved.
Yeah.
After I started crying. It was funny, though, being at a movie about... one of the themes of the movie was... have you heard the term code switching?
Maybe.
You say code switching? Yeah.
Yeah. Cooper's in. But so it was kind of funny that I was sitting next to somebody like that who kind of made me feel the need to put that... to do that. It was very meta, you know? Huh. But I moved. But anyway.
Yeah. The movie was good, though? I saw the trailer for it.
Yeah, it was. So, from the trailer, I expected it to be... Again, I'm very into magical realism, that kind of thing, so I was very excited, because in the trailer, there's a lot of basically very cool production, interesting ideas, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of them were featured in the trailer, so I was a little disappointed. Also, and again, I'm so sorry, but low-key my job, not a feminist movie at all. And I asked him a question about it, and he just dug himself into that hole. Just real deep.
What did he say?
Huh?
Well, what did you ask?
Well, it was about like a... I won't say it.
Was it like spoilers?
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
But, boy, oh boy. That was rough. But overall, it was good. It was really... The acting was like amazing.
What is this film? I'm not
Sorry to Bother You.
It showed at Sundance this year. And
okay.
I didn't get a chance to see it, but...
I asked you.
I heard good things about it. So.
It was really interesting. Tessa Thompson's in it.
And I love her.
Can't pronounce his name. I feel really bad about it. But I thought I knew how to pronounce it. And then... Boots Riley said it, the director, and I said, "Oh, not what I've been saying." But
what is this film about?
telemarketing.
A telemarketer. This is in the trailer. It's a telemarketer. And this is kind of like a parallel universe, kind of extra, right? Like mm-hmm. I said, a lot. Very cool, but parallel for sure to highlight certain themes they're trying to instill.
Oh, is this the one that somebody comes across a magical phrase or something that
he
makes
uses,
everybody
he
buy?
He can use, quote, white voice.
Oh,
and he becomes a
right.
really, really, really successful telemarketer.
Right.
And Steven Yeun's in it, and he's mm-hmm. really good. And Armie Hammer, of
he's
course. I'm obsessed with Armie Hammer.
He's a hunk.
Huh?
He's a hunk.
We're so
he's hunky. He's got that square jaw.
Yeah.
I don't actually think he's a hunk, but I think he's a really good actor. I love him. He has that
you
charisma.
Always say that. That
because it's
yeah.
true. You guys, you just think I'm in love with everybody and I'm not.
I'm just saying he's a hunk. You don't be in love
not
with
you.
He's
good looking.
Not you. Anyway. But no, he was really good, naturally. I want a movie about Armie Hammer's life, basically.
Mm.
Because, you know, he's the heir to Armie Hammer.
Really?
And he wanted it, hence the name. No joke. And he...
Wow.
That
Mind
took
blown,
you a
right?
second.
Yeah.
And... But
that's
and,
really tacky to think
yeah, it is.
After.
Well, you know what's more tacky, Cooper, what? Is he was like, I want to be an actor, guys. And they were like, no. He's like, yes, I do. And they disowned him.
Yeah.
And to See, quote, well, I won't quote him because he's a terrible person. I was going to, but look at him now as opposed
Armie
to
Hammers
look at me now.
If they really wanted
I was
going to
quote Chris Brown. I felt bad. Can't
yeah.
do that.
If they really wanted to screw him over, they would have named him Armand.
Armand
that was probably taken.
Yeah.
My name is Armand.
Yeah. No, he was in though. He was really good. I'm trying to think. There were a few little cameo things, but it was Bruce Riley's first movie. So that's neat. He wanted Richard Iwadi to direct it. I would have been so here for that. I would have been obsessed if that happened. Most
yeah.
Love Richard Iwadi.
Yeah, I love
Submarine.
Richard Iwadi.
So good.
I haven't seen Submarine, and I haven't seen the other one that he did with Jesse Eisenberg.
What the heck? Why not? They're both well. I'm not a huge fan of.
What is it? Doppelganger or something?
Yeah.
It's called?
No, what is it called? I always think of the Jake Gyllenhaal movie because obviously, so
yeah,
I don't remember.
Well, Jake Gyllenhaal's Enemies.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
The Jake Gyllenhaal, the Dennis Villeneuve film.
I was
Jake
thinking,
Gyllenhaal's
yeah. So then
Enemies,
I was thinking this one was called Nemesis, but I think that's just like movie dyslexia. Is it? No, it's
it
not.
Is.
That's
mean,
too much.
You mean Enemy?
No.
No.
No, the Jesse Eisenberg one with Mia Wasikowska.
It's directed. Yeah, it's
the
directed by
it's
Richard Iwadi. Yeah.
Oh, the double. Is it? I don't. I have no
it's
idea.
Double,
but that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that one's pretty good. But I like Submarine a lot better, and I like Greg Roberts a lot. But
okay.
Anyway.
Right.
I've been very well behaved because Cooper is here.
You've
I've been
very
calm.
Well
it's starting out. To. It's starting to come out now,
yeah.
but.
Slip out, yeah.
I've been. I took a horse tranquilizer before I got here.
You mean though?
Dang.
I only took it to leave. That was it for me. Where are you getting horse tranquilizers?
Yeah.
I do have a lot of unused pain pills that a little part of me wants to sell, but I won't.
No,
oh, man,
dump them.
Yeah.
Dump
I just
them
said
in
I won't.
Toilet.
I don't use them. They give them to me from all my stuff.
Yeah, I know, because you had the knee surgery and all that. I had the same issue when I broke my arms. I had a bunch of pain pills left over.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have another one soon. I'm unhappy. Didn't work.
Why did they do the first one if they're just going to have to go back and do it again? That's,
they didn't know. I'm an anomaly. It's very exciting. They get to write some papers about me.
You're an anemone?
Joy. Yeah.
Cool. So
keep it moving.
Let's move on to some trailers. So good. A lot of trailers came
yeah.
out this past week. I guess the bigger one we can talk about is Terry Gilliam's...
I'm so ready.
long-awaited project, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which she's been, trying to get made for 20 years-ish?
28 years.
28. All right. So 28 years. And it is finally coming out, or more than likely, this year. It might be showing at the Cannes Film Festival, maybe.
It's gonna be so good.
And so a trailer was just released, the very first trailer. I guess there have been a few still images, but... we know...
Ask me how I feel about it.
No, because I think it's fairly obvious.
Are the two of you watching it now?
No, I was just going to look up some information because I remember Jonathan.
What's happening to you?
Who is it? Jonathan know. Price is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Who is incidentally also in Brazil, and I think he was in another.
Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil
I
is one of my favorite
films. I think everybody loves Brazil. Godzilla,
wasn't he in some of the other Gilliam films? Jonathan Pryce, or am I confused?
I don't recall him any.
Me neither. But he is one of those actors, so it's possible.
But yeah, so this one's kind of a little twist on the Don Quixote.
Which I love in the first place.
How do you say it?
That's how I... Okay, look.
Don Quixote.
Don Quixote.
Yeah. I also, like, we were just talking about him, I guess, recently on about something. Maybe on the last show or the one before, but I like the trailer. I can say I was a little underwhelmed by it. It didn't feel like I didn't really get a reason why he's been trying to get this story made for 20 years. Like it just, now of course with a Terry Gilliam film, there's going to be a lot to going on that they're, I'm hoping this is just a very kind of standard trailer, yeah. So that way there's more to discover when you actually see it.
Which is a nice change. Boots Riley said his biggest director inspiration for Sorry to Bother You was Terry Gilliam.
Oh, really? I could see that.
Yeah. I'd say one thing I had an issue with was the humor. I thought the humor in the trailer was pretty weak. Other than that, I mean, I liked the look of it. I like Adam Driver a lot. I like Jonathan Pryce, but it was a little like, okay. It just feels like another kind of medieval fantasy movie to me.
My eternal optimism is at large here. Sorry.
I never did see Zero Theorem. Was that even
we've talked
good?
About? It's all right. This is the new Blade Runner. We've talked about this so much. It's okay. It's not worth it. Don't bother.
I know it came up once before, but I can't remember.
About seven times.
And that's the thing is Terry Gilliam. I think his earlier films were really spectacular and pushed the edge. But there and there are so many directors who obviously were influenced by him.
Right, that they faded.
And so the stuff that he's done is no longer really like, ooh, cutting edge, pushing the envelope, interesting, progressive, you know, it's just kind of, oh, it's a Terry Gilliam film, okay, you know, wee.
I'm obsessed with all of them. I've watched all of Michael Palin's travel things, I've read all his books, John Cleese, I low-key stalked that one time, it's fine, Eric Idle's my favorite. If they're doing anything, I'm gonna see it.
Right. Well, are you a Terry Gilliam fan, Cooper, or are you...
He's never seen Fawlty Towers.
I have not seen Fawlty Towers. I'm
going to call you out there.
Fawlty Towers is the best.
I've only seen Monty Python, The Holy Grail, and then...
He doesn't love it.
And I don't really love it. I just the type of humor is just not...
I do not love
It's just not for me. Grail. It's just not my type of humor. But I do love Brazil. Like, Brazil is one of my favorites. I love the practical effects. I'm a sucker for practical effects and movies. And there's just so many cool little touches with, you know, all the sets are all, like, it's just like a big playhouse. A lot of, like, his apartment and stuff like that. But also, I mean, like, the themes are pretty cool. Like, they're told pretty simply. And it's like, you get the point, you know, like, 10 minutes of the movie, what we're trying to say. But it's still an awesome movie. I also love the ending to it. How it's just, like, very kind of depressing. It's very grim. And
lot of his movies are almost exclusively, I think, that way.
Yeah.
And I also, one thing I love about Brazil is the story behind Brazil and just how much he had to fight to get that film released.
Like this one.
A lot of his films, I think he has to fight to get released.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't say the man's not passionate, because he definitely is.
True.
But I'm curious. I have a copy of the edited film they show on, you know, syndicated TV. I think it's called the Love Will Prevail version. I can't remember, but it ends with it has a happy ending where him and the bus driver woman, like, they escape and they go to this beautiful countryside. I think it ends with when he's dreaming in the bed about, like, their life they could live. I think it just ends there or something like that. Also, they cut out in that version, which is about almost an hour shorter, they cut out all of the fantasy scenes of him flying as Icarus, which are some of the coolest scenes in the movie. Like, I love those scenes. And they just cut them out. They're just like, this doesn't make sense. This is dumb. The dumb people won't get it. Like, but, the movie's awesome. I think that movie is really funny, though. I think maybe what it comes down to between those two movies is I love sci-fi, and I'm not that crazy about...
Have you seen Baron von Munchausen?
No.
You'd like it.
It's fun. I mean, it's utter fluff. There's nothing to it.
Yeah, the visuals are ridiculous.
Oh, the visuals are astounding.
I love sci-fi, but I'm not crazy about, like, high fantasy medieval type of stuff. Like,
well,
I love medieval stuff. Yeah. So I'm kind of, although I like sci-fi a lot, I'm kind of the opposite.
Well, they all went to Cambridge for, like, history.
Yeah.
So it's just in their parts.
Yeah.
Like Passion Phil.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Passion Phil. We'll have to get him on the show.
Oh.
Passion Phil?
My roommate who you just hired.
Yeah.
He called himself Passion Phil when he was talking to Chloe and myself and Gemma.
He is very passionate.
He's really nice. That was really funny.
Right now he's transcribing old biblical texts.
Yeah.
There we go.
He's also going to Oxford.
Yeah.
Next year. And then to Harvard. He's already been accepted for his PhD at Harvard. So,
well.
Smart guy. If you want to have a biblical episode,
we can talk about Noah.
VeggieTales.
Oh, yes.
VeggieTales is what I'm contributing.
He likes Tarkovsky a lot. So, if you guys ever have a Tarkovsky episode, he's into those types of, metaphysical.
Yeah,
type
bright, mm-hmm. bright, bright films.
He hasn't seen Stalker, though, which is weird because he likes Tarkovsky. So,
yeah.
Whatever.
He's saving it.
It's you would love a little treat.
You would love it. I took him to see...
After he finishes the biblical stuff, he's going
to... Yeah. Well, it's funny. I saw Death of Stalin with him over the weekend at our theater and on the way home. And he's one of those people that you could ask about any period in time and he could just tell you everything about it. Mm. He has one of those encyclopedic...
I saw it with my version of Passion Phil as well. If he just finishes...
Song. Yeah, so he just after we left the theater, he told me about all of this other stuff surrounding the events of
I got the same thing, but I just slowly turned the radio.
Oh, see, I like that. I like having that,
my friend puts his little
spin, flare.
Flare's a good word.
Flourishes.
Yeah.
Stylistic flourishes
on it, and I can't sometimes.
Hmm. Anyway,
but yeah, so.
I'm excited for this one, though.
Yeah. I mean, it looks cool. So
I like Jonathan Pryce. I like Adam Driver.
I love Adam Driver.
It's Terry Gilliam, and his stories are always a little wacky because you never know quite what to expect with them.
Mm-hmm.
The last few films. I mean, what was it? Zero Theorem, and the Parnassus, Dr. Parnassus.
The best. Oh yeah. Correction. Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus is my favorite, and then. Baron von Munchausen, which my dad made me watch every time I want to say I'm sick, which is really rude. But
Munchausen
anyway.
Proxy syndrome.
Dr. Parnassus.
Dr. Parnassus was not half bad. I kind of
it's
enjoyed
so
it.
Good.
Zero Theorem, from what I understand, is kind of
it wasn't great.
For my money, his best films were some of his earlier works. I mean, Time Bandits, Brazil, obviously.
Everybody loves Time Bandits.
I haven't seen that, but I've.
Well, Time Bandits is great. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a big indictment of technology and sort of rampant progress. And
that's cool. I hate technology.
I love technology. I just hate the uses of technology.
Cooper loves his DS too much.
I do have a DS. I play Nintendo Switch.
Were you about to say, is that what it is? Yeah, I don't know the Switch difference.
I don't think very much.
Yeah, well, actually, I've been playing my Game Boy at work.
I only play the most recent game systems.
That's not true. Mm. You saw us playing?
He plays all of them. I play all the difference.
Yeah. I got a Super Nintendo plugged up right now.
He's just a fanboy.
Any games?
But 12 Monkeys is also one of my favorite Gilliam films.
It's not one of my favorites. Bruce Willis is good,
Bruce Willis, Brad Pitt. Yeah.
You see that.
Yeah. I like it. It's just so wacky. And I mean, it's going with the theory of insanity, considering we just saw Insane. It's one of those things.
Insane, Brayden. Only fake words here.
I said insane. That's what I said. I said insane. Play it back. We'll check the record.
We've done this before and I lose every time. Yeah. So.
But just the whole time you're watching this and you're going, is Brad Pitt loony? Or is he actually right?
Mm.
The story in that I thought was absolutely spectacular. And it's a really, really interesting film. And what's so cool about it is the fact that it's not your traditional Terry Gilliam because it's not really...
Right.
Aesthetic.
It's very contained.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
It's just all very modern and grim and
plot driven.
Yeah. It's more plot and character driven than it is, look at all the wacky aesthetics.
Mm-hmm. What's the premise of it?
Oh, it's
there's
a time travel. You got to go back to save the world. And
Brad Pitt is sent back in order to prevent somebody from creating some sort of super virus that wipes out people. Okay. And 12 Monkeys is a reference to the test subjects for.
I just realized that show Future Man totally ripped off 12 Monkeys. Missed that. Good to know.
But yeah, perfect. So this one, still no official release date yet. Yeah, it may be at some film festivals.
It'll be at my 89th birthday.
Yeah. hopefully it's going to come out this year, but it keeps on getting pushed back and then delayed and all that. So, but yeah, so.
It's a real tulip fever.
Correct.
Let's hope not.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Tulip fever.
It's on Netflix now.
Really?
Yeah.
Make sure to watch that tonight.
Pop it in
that
HD.
Yeah. 4K. Yeah, 4K. Netflix,
if you want to feel yourself inching closer to death, watch Tulip Fever.
Yeah.
It makes you fully aware of your mortality.
Yeah.
You haven't watching seen it, though, right?
This, my time is being spent how?
Have you seen it?
No, I didn't.
I watched the first 10 minutes, and it's, like, it's not...
Like, I don't mean that's an insult, but I feel like you'd like it. Maybe the most out of all of us.
No, I mean, because, I mean, I like Alicia Vikander, but I watched
And you like Dean... DeHaan.
Oh, I hate Dane DeHaan.
And you're the only one who can tolerate Cara Delevingne. And Christoph Waltz is in it, though.
Only in Valerian. And Dane DeHaan, I like him in a couple things, but...
Zach Galifianakis.
That's right.
Really?
Zach Galifianakis.
He's serious now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, but the thing is, the first, like, I watched about 10 minutes. Like, it's well made, it's well acted, it looks good, but for some reason, there's just something so off about it, and it's hard to even pin down exactly what it is, but it's like,
who directed it?
Not who sure. cares?
Yeah.
So, but it's
they're never just feels so again.
Weirdly empty and off.
Yeah.
And it's hard to pin down, but it's not like it's deserving of the 4% it has on Rotten Tomatoes, but it's not definitely not great. So.
Well, it's just such a slog. There's nothing at all engrossing that will pull you in because everything just seems flat.
Again, disclaimer, none of us has seen it.
Yeah.
Well, I saw bits and pieces because we did play it at the Chelsea. God help us. We played it at the Chelsea.
Yeah.
God
help us. And I saw bits and pieces, and the whole thing, and no matter where you go in, at what point in the film, there's no heightened sense of tension. Everything is just flat.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And it's dead. Kind of,
yeah.
And
some might say impressive, so we'll look at it that way.
Well, it's so weird because you've got this remarkable ensemble cast, right? Well, for the most part.
It's okay.
Alicia Vikander, Christoph Waltz.
Alicia.
Whatever. I don't speak Swedish. She's Swedish, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe,
Christoph Waltz,
keep going.
Yeah.
Move on
Judy
now.
Dench, but I mean, it just despite that, just the story is boring. The performances are workday kind of performances. There's, you can tell they're not really invested all that much in it.
Right.
Anyhow, point is, it just
it's not great.
The costumes look very good.
There's a lot of good stuff about it. We won't go into it, but. But yeah, so keep an eye out for The Man Who Killed Don Quixote out in real world 2, you know? Did I say real world?
I don't know what you said.
The world.
World. Anyways, moving on. But so the other trailer we have is the for the first trailer for the first Purge, which is coming out in...
I don't care. I don't like them. That's what I have to say.
I can't contain myself.
I saw this and I thought it was...
I'm not saying, oh, is everybody excited for this movie? I was brought up as a discussion piece, not for like, oh, 5 stars, everybody.
I thought it was interesting because, I mean, the Purge series is, it's a little on the nose with sort of some of the political commentary. I don't know about the first one, but I mean, it's
with
this... With Ethan Hawke. But since then, it's tried to go more sort of this political commentary, dystopian future, collapse of government kind of route.
Yeah.
And this one I think is interesting because it looks at things, it sort of views the Purge, I guess, it touches on Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
I think, which is the interesting thing about it.
Well, I mean,
the impression that I get. Is that it references Black Lives Matter as a movement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we should say it as background. So this is the fourth film in the trilogy of where One Night a Year, kind of in the not so distant future.
It's not a trilogy anymore if there's a fourth film.
Quadrilogy.
but it's a prequel to those where all crime is legal for a 12-hour period.
One night.
And you quote unquote purge, you know, yourself. and it kind of brings somehow social classes more evenly. And this is the going back to the very first one that started it. But actually, I mean, it's for the most part they are not great films. They're just very clunky in terms of commentary. But this one is actually being directed by a guy who did a Sundance documentary about the dangers of fraternity hazing.
What?
Showed it the year before last. My sister actually saw it. I think it might be on Netflix, but I actually thought it was kind of interesting with the dealing with gun commentary and the kind of social classes. I thought, it's not going to be a great movie by any means, but I think there's at least a pinch of interesting commentary that feels relevant to what's going on.
Some of the Purge films, I think, have gotten some, I wouldn't say critical acclaim, but have gotten...
The second one, I think, is the most well-received.
Yeah, some fairly positive reception by critics. I don't know. I mean, it's just, even if it does address important social, cultural, political topics, the way in which you treat, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's irresponsible filmmaking to intertwine those kind of topics with unnecessary violence, especially if it's a prequel, right? So the outcome is not great,
right?
Well, just let me ask you this.
Wait, Cooper, what are your thoughts?
Riddle me this. The Purge is tomorrow in the real world, but what are you gonna do? You have one day to do whatever you want.
Fucking fight, man.
Fight.
Get my dog. Go for it, man.
Just fight?
Or just pop in a Blu-ray. Yeah.
lock my doors. Yeah. Put in a Blu-ray.
Yeah, I would, still watch 4K. Yeah.
Watch the Purge during the Purge.
Yeah. That'd be kind of cool. I think, bear with me here, I think I'd steal a bunch of Lego sets. Because they're so expensive.
You're so weird.
You always see the Lego sets when you go out and you're like, wow, these are so cool, but they're like $200.
Yeah, you're gonna risk being dismembered so you can go steal some Legos.
Well, I have a pretty big, fearsome-looking dog that can protect me, so.
Oh, yes.
He's a whole 8 pounds.
Yeah, machine guns don't do anything to those.
Well, I'm pretty sure Hank is indestructible.
Yeah. But you're saying you would, like, let's say we're here. So the Walmart is about 7 minutes.
That's fair. You can steal from Walmart because they're so terrible, and you shouldn't feel guilty.
7 minutes driving across a few streets.
Yeah.
You would go get your dog in the back seat of your white car.
My Honda Civic.
You're brand new.
More than likely unarmed.
Maybe a
fork.
He definitely has a baseball bat somewhere.
He's got a butter knife.
What would you get?
What would I get, honestly? Yeah.
If you...
Legos.
Ooh, if I could really get... Honestly, Legos, whatever. I would get Criterion Blu-ray. $40 for Blu-ray? It would be like the Criterion Closet videos. On YouTube, there's Criterion...
It's like you go into Barnes & Noble, you make it there, and all of them are gone. That's the only thing.
Like
there's
guys,
guys in clown masks all stealing all the Criterion. AK-47 on their back, and they've got giant bags of Criterion collection film.
A guy turns around.
An autumn afternoon.
Yeah, he has like a clown mask, and he has like 40
copies of Days of Heaven.
Yeah.
Stop at the Starbucks cafe on the way. You know?
I want that Rossellini War trilogy.
Get your hands off my Terrence Malick.
No.
Fair enough.
No, I'd probably just play video games or something.
I'd go with you. If you were going.
We're going to do it. Team, us Blu-ray brothers, we're just fish bump.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
I'm really happy for you guys.
This took a very surreal turn.
A night of
murdering and dismemberment and all kinds of just horrible behavior. What are you going to do? I think I'll steal some movies.
Although, to be fair...
The largest Blu-ray heist.
To be fair, this area
is full
of a bunch of old people. We could probably make it there and back before all of the...
That is not true,
I saw
Henry.
A lot of big trucks at McDonald's this morning.
Oh, there's some...
You stay away from Hillsborough. Everybody's packing heat.
There are
here.
Actual Klansmen here, so maybe not.
That's true.
We live in the South.
I don't know if it starts at 6 o'clock. If it's 6 o'clock, we're going right then.
Exactly. That's true.
It's like Black Friday, but with guns.
Yeah. Machetes. Yeah. Go get back.
Okay.
Cool. So that one comes out on July 4th.
You're welcome already. The key is to get lots of fake blood stuff, look already dunzo, because that's not fun for anybody.
But they're not. They'll kick you all down.
No, they won't. They're busy.
You have faith.
I do. People. I like it.
Well, anyway, The Purge is coming out.
Yeah, that's it. In July.
I haven't seen any of them.
Irresponsible. So I really don't have much I've seen the first one.
Yeah. I've seen
not by choice.
I've seen all of them, but
I prefer Krampus.
Krampus.
Interesting. I over the first one,
like
I
was geriatric disease.
Krampus. Oh, I got the Krampus. Yeah. So okay, well, cool. I guess that's about all the trailers and stuff we got for this week. But I guess we can just move on to some mail. So the FilmBuds podcast at gmail.com is the address that you can reach us, or on Twitter and Facebook. We have one from on Twitter today. Tweeter. So correct. So
the tweet.
Yeah.
Feel free, if whether you're a new listener or you've been listening for a long time, feel
Katie.
Free. Katie, feel free to send us anything, whatever you want to say, commentary, questions, whatever. We'd be happy to answer them for you. So this one's from Chris, first one, and this is what I was saying about the Japanese culture stuff in Isle of Dogs. So Chris asks, while I haven't had a chance to see Isle of Dogs yet, I love the art style of the movie and I really want to see it, but my big question going into it is how well do they handle a story set in Japan but written and directed by a non-Japanese team? Basically, does it feel authentic or is it relying on stereotypes to represent Japan? Also, in the trailer, they have one shot of a mushroom cloud-shaped explosion with the dog comically reacting, wow.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Which is why I worry there might be... Yeah, they included that. Where there might be a problematic representation there. But it looks so interesting at the same time. Thanks, Film Buds. Stay fly.
I would say... Don't let this steer you away from the movie. It is like kind of weird to think about that it is primarily Westerners making this movie set in Japan with Japanese characters, yeah. But I don't think that it's done in a way that is offensive.
No, I think I really don't. There's enough homage there. And
yeah,
enough kind
of it's out of love.
Well, that's all it is. It's just an homage. And I don't give a damn who makes an homage so long as it's done in such a way. And I mean, Wes Anderson obviously isn't taking himself seriously. He's not trying to. He doesn't take the story. Seriously, he's not trying to take an old Japanese legend or myth and do some sort of weird Western spin on it or anything like that. It's just like a purely fabricated story. He just happens to use some of the old aesthetics that came from sort of boyhood fantastical stories that he saw, like maybe Astro Boy or Speed Racer.
So about Astro Boy. Grew up on Astro Boy.
Well, I mean, the thing about the mushroom cloud is, if you've ever watched any anime ever, there's going to be a mushroom cloud.
Wes Anderson movies, there's, and like in Fantastic Mr. Fox, there's like the explosions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, I think it's well handled, especially since it is like a kid's movie, or I mean, or it's animated. But I mean, like we always go back to it, but with Michael Bay,
I knew it.
In Age of Extinction, the fourth Transformers film, there's a large section set in Tokyo. And all of it is just so... I mean, whatever little tidbits of culture they
is
put in there...
Is it Tokyo? No, that's Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, sorry. Yeah. It's so, like, cringeworthy.
Yeah.
You want to see horrible racial stereotype representations, go watch.
Yeah.
Any Michael Bay movie ever.
Yeah. But in this movie, it's maybe at times a little clunky, but it's... it's entertaining one way or the other.
I don't see that there are really any racial stereotypes in the film. There are archetypes.
Right.
But I don't see there being
But they're based in, like the Japanese scientists, like, they're based in...
Real.
Like Godzilla. Like, you know, like, that... I felt like the scenes with the Japanese scientists were, like, an homage to the Godzilla films, like the early Godzilla films, which are 90% scientists in labs using very 60s-looking equipment, which a lot of people think the Godzilla movies are just Godzilla the whole time, which they're just not. You'll be really bored if you think that's what's going to happen. But, like, the Japanese scientist archetype, it's all pulled from earlier films, and it's an homage to it. Like, if anything, I think the conversation should be how much he's borrowing for other films is okay, not how much is he borrowing from another culture. Like, I don't think that it's done in a way that's offensive. But one thing, and I don't know if this is getting too into the weeds, is, like we said before, Japanese characters in the movie aren't supplied with dialogue, or I'm sorry, subtitles when they're delivering dialogue. So
Well, I don't think that that's like offensive or anything like that.
A
like,
little distancing.
Maybe it's, it might feel like this is alien. But yeah. I think it's more so why it does that is because the you want to connect more with the dogs. Like the dogs want to, like the movie's about dogs and you want to feel like the dogs are the central characters. And yeah. I feel like even if they were English speaking actors, but for whatever reason we didn't understand them, he wouldn't supply subtitles either.
All the Japanese dialogue is translated too.
Well, a lot of it is.
Well, not all of it.
No, there's some stuff that's not.
Well,
it is degraded.
Some of it, but
just in terms of the how they're doing it.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Well, it just made my only thing. It was an interesting decision, I guess, to make the foreign exchange student the like lead of the.
Yeah, that would be the only thing that I sort of take issue with.
Yeah, me too. Actually.
Why does it have to be the Greta Gerwig character?
Hey, now.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just saying, great.
She's going Lady Bird on us.
Yeah. No, but it's... but regardless of who voices it, why does it have to be that character who sort of motivates, organizes the resistance?
But, I mean, it just...
But I mean, the main character who's the one who's the impetus for all this sort of blow up of tensions is Atari, who's acting
for lack of a better word, selfishly, though. He's not doing it for any greater reason, initially.
Now, she may be American, but I thought she was foreign, is the director of American Honey.
Oh, yeah.
So, American Honey is very much, you're kind of inundated with American culture.
Right.
And there's both kind of satire, like the kind of the classic Christian mom.
Shy up.
Christian mom who's super conservative, but her daughter's like this super rebellious girl. But then there's also really kind of nice homages to the nice things about American culture, and like in terms of the variety of people and everything. And so that's kind of in a way like this. Of course, that's a little bit more realistic. But
well, she did the same thing with Fish Tank, which is a lot. You know, that's a similar, just assessing basically the area, which I think she's from like Kent or something, the director. So it's a lot more closely related.
Right.
But I think that's just her style, is to like zoom in on an area of just the world.
I think for people to like call out Wes Anderson for making a movie that takes place in Japan, it's just like, Dash is opening a can of worms. Like, there's so many directors. Like, Wim Wenders made Paris, Texas, which is a movie that takes place, but no one would call him out on it because as an American, we aren't offended by that.
Right.
And I just, and like you said before, it seems to be more white Americans that are calling out.
They're superimposing some sort of sense of racial injustice or moral outrage on this when there really isn't one.
But
I think if the Japanese watched this, they'd find it silly and fun.
Yeah, I mean, because they're in terms of homage, there's the sushi preparing scene, and you say, man, that's so intricate in how they do that. And then you get kind of more silly happens with every comedy.
The little
really.
Touches, yeah. I mean, just the little touches which show that Wes Anderson is more aware of some of this stuff.
Yeah, he's also clearly acknowledging like the most famous directors from
the area.
But I mean, just the manner in which the sushi is prepared, and if you watch that, there's obviously he's
studies research.
He's done some research on how sushi is prepared.
Yeah,
and the scene with the sumo wrestlers, and then they have a bout, and then there's a winner, and then everybody's throwing. I forget what it is they throw into the ring afterwards, but it's like a little pamphlet or something. But it's just touches like that, which show that he is aware and is paying attention to their culture. And he's not trying to reproduce it in fine detail, but there are things that he's noticed and he says, that's beautiful. Let's put that in. That's really intriguing.
It's out of admiration.
It's out of admiration. You know. He has respect for it. And I don't think it's, you know, the story is just sort of a whimsical, silly story.
Yeah.
And it's not intended to be some sort of heavy commentary or indictment of Japanese culture or race or anything like that.
At no point in the movie is the culture a butt of a joke.
No.
At any point.
No.
So I just think that this whole controversy is a little bit overblown. And I don't let it prevent you from seeing the movie.
For sure. Yeah. So thanks for the question, Chris.
Yeah.
And the other one we have is from Nathaniel. So he says, Hey, foam buds. You guys are super cool.
Thanks.
Anyway, I was wondering which...
Even you, Cooper.
Yeah. I was wondering which trope character is usually your favorite in a movie or show. Mine, for example, is usually the over-cautious sidekick. Thanks.
Like us.
Right.
On site.
And so I guess in terms of tropes, like which ones we'd usually see pop up in a variety of movies, or I guess archetypal characters in a way. For me, I just like ones that, you know, just make asses of themselves.
Yeah,
you know?
I was going to say, probably my favorite is the hot shot that is actually just the total, like, loser. Like,
yeah.
Like, what comes to mind is Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Why am I forgetting his name? The actor. Jesus. Main actor in Big Trouble in Little China.
Kurt Russell?
Kurt Russell. Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he's, you know, this really big macho dude, comes and thinks he understands every situation, but then he just
totally screws everything up.
Yeah. And it's just the laughing stock of the whole movie and is totally inept.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like in Fantastic Mr. Fox with George Clooney's character.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's so smart, so ready for everything, and then it's a complete mess, you know.
That, so I like that character type a lot, and just any character that's just neurotic.
Yeah,
I just love really
shock.
I love, I'm the most neurotic person, so like Barton Fink, you know.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I love Barton Fink, and the more humorous end of things, George Costanza.
Yeah.
Not a film, but you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Just give me the neuroses.
Ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it. More neurotic, the better. So.
Yeah. Brandon, any ones that come to mind for you?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I mean, I just I can't think of any. I can't put my finger on any specific.
I know. I like one like the Matt Damon's character in The Informant. I love that type of just like
I can't watch.
He's
hapless, like
he's thinks he's so slick.
Yeah,
and then it's just a complete mess, you know.
Or a Brad Pitt in Burn After Reading.
Yes, yeah.
He's
a lot
great.
Of
he's such a tool. He's such an enormous.
I love that movie. And
yeah,
flies under everyone's radar.
I'm a big fan. Yeah,
that's actually one of my favorites. It's so funny.
Yeah, it is
really hilarious. Sean Malkovich is great.
The hatchet scene.
Yeah,
that I don't know why that movie doesn't get more attention than it does.
Yeah,
that's like one of their only movies I like.
Yeah,
so. Really?
What do you mean, really? We've been over this so many times.
Oh, I'm offended.
Yeah, every time.
What about No Country?
No, she hates No Country.
Not a fan.
That end? Tommy Lee Jones?
Oh, man, I love that end.
I saw that far out there.
It sounds like him and Jason Bourne. It's like, we gotta catch Jason. gotta cut the head off this thing. Brutal.
God, I love Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, he's cool.
I'm usually like a main character person.
He's a main
character. Well, yeah,
there's no main character.
I'm answering the question.
Wow.
I'm extending.
Sorry.
I like Harry Potter. No one else does. Everyone hates him.
I love Harry Potter.
I like Harry. I always I'm more of a Sean person than a Gus person.
I'm a Sean person for sure.
Yeah. What can you do?
What's the question again?
What's your favorite type of trope character or character tropes?
Well, I don't know. I want to say, you know, I've always liked the tough guy who's in over his head, but just sort of stoically bulls on. But I don't think that's really it. I think it's sort of the sidekick who lacks confidence and is ultimately capable. And you were saying Harry Potter, and I was just thinking of Ron Weasley,
mm-hmm.
who is sort of bumbling
useless.
And doesn't know. And
love him, love Ron.
Well, and then at the end of the whole series,
love Rupert Grint because he has a mini pig farm and an ice cream truck. Different.
I wonder if there's any overlap between those two things.
Yeah, maybe.
The pig milk.
Yikes.
Pig milk.
Herb cream.
100% pig's milk ice cream right here.
I think his sales just dwindled.
He's off to now.
But guys who just seem like completely incapable, but then put into the right situation or when faced with some insurmountable
adversity,
can thrive.
Seemingly insurmountable adversity, they come into their own.
Right.
So.
That's fair.
That's a good one. Yeah. But cool.
Rock on.
Yeah, rock on, man. All right. Well, thanks for the emails, y'all. And so I guess finally we can just do our picks of the week, which Cooper, we just kind of talk about some of the stuff we've watched and or things we would recommend or maybe stuff we wouldn't, which I have one I would not recommend, which is not movie related at all, but...
Okay.
Well, anything you've watched recently?
That you most recently in theaters saw Death Stalin. And have you guys already talked? Have you guys talked about that?
She said she saw and talked a little bit about it.
You didn't like it?
I did like
it. Oh, you did?
Just a little. Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely be my pick for the week. Came out a little bit ago, so.
Yeah.
But it's not as funny throughout as a lot of people expect. It's not like watching an episode of Veep or something like that. But if you're a history nerd, especially if you like Eastern European. And like
who don't? So,
I think it's awesome. I think that period in time,
very interesting.
Yeah, all throughout Eastern Europe,
a big mess.
Yeah, which just, for lack of a better term, a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
And this film is very narrow in its focus. Like, it's not trying to cover everything that happens following, you know, the death of Stalin. Yeah, but it's like
small scale.
It's like 3 days after.
I think it would have been a good play. I would have rather.
Well, what's a play?
Well, you're welcome.
There you go.
But it's good. If you like history, you like comedy, you like the mix of the two, Steve Buscemi is, Nikita Khrushchev is, like, the best. Check it out.
All right, well, the thing I would not recommend is, I didn't even know it had come out, was 30 Seconds to Mars had their new album come out.
Bad news.
And I'm not, like, a huge fan of theirs. I really like Jared Leto a lot in, like, his acting work. And I like some of their early stuff, but more and more they're becoming more electronic and synthy in their music, which is fine, but it's feeling more and more mainstreamy as opposed to their earlier stuff. And they just had a new album come out a few days ago called America.
Yeah.
And I hate to be this critical, but it's pretty darn horrendous. Okay. Like, it's like, I would say there's maybe one song on there that is okay. Everything else is just like
Cooper's crush.
Completely, like, kind of bereft of passion or inspiration. It feels so like just blah. It's like
I didn't know we were doing music on here now.
Oh yeah. I could have said an album that I listened to.
Why not? Go for it.
A new album that I've been listening to a lot. I think it came out earlier this year. Album called Serpent Music by this guy named Yves Y-V-E-S Tumor. And it's like a blend of like soul music and industrial music, and it's got a little noise in there. Yeah. So.
Serpent what?
Serpent music. Very, very cool.
All right.
So, check that one out.
And yeah, but so 30 Seconds to Mars, not... Sorry, guys. You missed the mark with this one, but maybe he's just carrying... Chloe's losing it. She's losing it.
I'm obsessed with that name. It's
Serpent music.
No, Yves Tumor.
I will mention I finished Red Sparrow, the novel, and overall it was pretty solid. The last 20% or so...
Are you going to read the other two?
I'm gonna read something else before but it was pretty solid overall, very well detailed and pretty compelling for the most part. The last 20 minutes, the last 20% or so felt, especially since I know how it ends because I've seen the movie, it's a little slow, but overall pretty good. And then I watched Iris last night on Netflix.
Great. Mm-hmm. She's my inspiration.
Which is the documentary about Iris. Is it Apple?
Yeah.
I want to be her so
I'm trying
bad.
To remember if I saw that one or not. Bad. I don't think I did, but we played that at Chelsea, and Mary quite liked that.
Yeah, but it's a fun, entertaining movie. It's about the fashion designer who's very...
It's about the most fly woman ever to live.
Yeah, at the time she was 90, and so she's, you know, quite elderly in 2013. Very big and bold types of clothing, and she, like, she'll go to thrift stores and she'll go to all these different very small scale places and buy stuff rather than just being like most and going to an auction buying this for $30,000. She just picks
and
chooses.
That's how I do it.
Yeah, but it was pretty entertaining. Nothing amazing, but she's a really kind of cool, charming lady to kind of watch go and find things in stores and stuff. But I think that's actually the only thing I've really watched this past week, but that's on Netflix now. So
sorry to interject one more time, the album came out 2 years ago. I just heard it now. Also though, Netflix just binge watched the first season of the Queer Eye for the Straight Guy reboot.
My favorite show in the whole world. It's they great. Both know I've talked about this so many times.
It's
Anthony
good.
Is my life.
I love Anthony. He doesn't really do
of course
shit
you do.
On that show, but
that's why he's so amazing.
Worth watch.
It makes you feel really good. I've teared up a couple times.
Really?
They're really turning these men's lives around. I need to go on that show.
I appreciate you backing... No, you don't. I appreciate you backing me up on this, because I think they just think I'm being me. But it's really, really, really good.
Oh, I've heard. I've heard good things about it. So, yeah. Well, Chloe, anything for you?
Well, I watched a movie called Miss Stevens a couple times because I was having a rough week.
With old Timmy.
Yeah. But aside from that, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Lily Rabe, the lead actress, looks a lot like Ethan Hawke, but obviously a woman, so that's weird. But other than that, it's super good. It's like a very calm watch, very poignant, but it's not
easy
like
watch.
Super out there, whatever. And then, what else did I watch? Some other show. Oh, I watched a show called Killing Eve. I watched the first episode. It's with Sandra Oh and then a bunch of British. It's an English show.
Interesting.
It's like a... It's like one of those cat and mouse kind of shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really good.
Okay.
All ladies, but aside. Anyway, I watched something else too. I don't remember what it was. Brandon, you want to go? Well, I think.
Or Brandon, you've been too busy.
Do I want to go? Yeah, okay. Bye. bad jokes. bad jokes. Dad jokes. Do they rhyme? Yes, they do. Big coincidence there.
Oh, that's what I watched. Ingrid Goes West.
What'd you think?
I watched it with Kaylee last night.
What'd you think?
It was very predictable, first of all.
Yeah.
I said, I know what's going to happen. And then that happened. I said, I know what else is going to happen.
I see it coming. Here it comes.
It made me feel a lot more sane.
Cool.
I did. Because she's a nut job, so I felt a lot better about myself.
Yeah.
But it wasn't great. Again, it was aesthetically pleasing, but it makes sense. It's about like Instagram and stuff, so it makes sense. My Instagram's not pleasing. It's called Clobo, and it's my best friend's little sister does it. There's just a bunch of really unflattering pictures of me.
Yeah, you've mentioned that.
It's really funny, though. But aesthetically, it's pleasing, but not great. Aubrey Plaza's not a great actress. Mm-hmm. We gotta be honest. She just plays Aubrey Plaza.
I like her.
Being shock. Elizabeth Olsen's good, though.
I like her a lot, too.
Yeah. It was not great. Well, I would not watch it again.
Brayden, anything for you?
Well, since we're discussing Aubrey Plaza... Season 2 of Legion just started.
Oh, yeah.
Great show.
It is absolutely fantastic. I mean, I can't say enough good things about this show. Everybody's
it's so
gonna,
good.
Oh, you're just a Marvel fanboy. Yeah. But
I don't know anything about Marvel. I barely know how to spell it, and I really like the show.
It's so far afield from anything else Marvel has offered. It's done by Noah Hawley, who does Fargo, right?
Fargo.
And he's good just... show. He's amazing.
His books are really good, too.
But, I mean, this series, the aesthetics... And sort of the throwback to the old sort of 60s. What is the show I'm thinking of that it
Secret Agent Man? It draws a lot of that hyper.
Yeah, very weird geometric designs and repetitive, symmetrical sort of. It's really.
It's like if the Man from U.N.C.L.E. was interesting with some like Spider-Man stuff.
I mean, that's what it. There was that old spy show. What the hell was it called?
Which one?
Get Smart?
No, it wasn't Get Smart. It was more sort of serious. It might have been
Spy
The Man
Kids.
From U.N.C.L.E.
Spy Kids.
No, it was back in the 60s.
Oh,
it had
Man from
nothing
U.N.C.L.E.
to do with
serious.
Antonio Rodriguez.
Is it the one?
No, that's the one's comical.
No, but the aesthetic is a throwback to all that kind of stuff, and it's really, you know, intriguing, beautiful, strange.
Yeah, I've heard good stuff.
But that aside, I mean, it's kind of an interesting look at, you know, mutant powers. And it's not like mutant powers, like, I'm super strong.
Oh,
I'm
is it The Avengers? Great show. Look, that's
that
funny.
Yeah, that might have been it. I think
love
it was.
Those kinds of tie-ins. Yeah, The Avengers is really good.
Which there was actually an Avengers
with
film.
Diana
Ray Fiennes. Ray Fiennes and
Ray
Fiennes.
Yeah.
Oh, Voldemort. My God.
You
stop correcting my
Voldemort.
Name pronunciations today.
cool.
But him and Uma Thurman did the Avengers.
Oh, thing. That's right.
Yeah,
back
90s, early 2000s?
Didn't do so hot. I think it was 2000.
Was it? Okay. But yeah, the TV show was based on had that sense
so
of
good.
Aesthetic that resurfaces in Legion. But that aside, I mean, it's kind of fun because it's like mutant powers that nobody... Two people living in the same body. How's that a mutant power? It's not really interesting, but it's a mutant power.
It works. sounds like a bona fide mutant.
But it's just a fun series to watch. It's so strange, and they do things like, I think, I'm not exactly sure what it was, but I think it was this first episode of season two. There was like a big psychic power battle between David, who's the lead character, this ancient evil psychic entity known as the Shadow King that had been inhabiting him for several years. And
classic name.
And the Jermaine Clement of Flight of the Conchords character.
My favorite person in the world.
Yeah, he's awesome. He plays Oliver, I forget the guy's last name.
Oliver
Twist. Who is the new, he's the new host for the Shadow King after David kicks out the Shadow King. And they have this big psychic battle, and it's, rather than lights and powers and all this kind of stuff, it's like modern interpretive dance.
Yeah, it's dope.
I'm dead serious. And you kind of watch it, you go, this is
it's like
strange
a
and awkward. But by the time of it, you're just going, oh my God, who the hell else would do something like this?
Yeah.
It's so just wacky out there different.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to check that out. That's on FX. But yeah, so I guess that does it. I guess Cooper's got to head out in just a few minutes, right?
Yep.
Gotta go hit the grind, you know?
The daily grind. Literally grind those beans.
Joke again.
Yeah, there you go.
Jokes.
But yeah, so next week, I guess now it's been discussed more than likely A Quiet Place. If not, we'll figure something else out because we don't really want to do Rampage. There's just nothing to talk about with that movie. Just aside from
those are some characters big old metal animals.
Characters are okay, CG's fine, blah blah. That's basically
I could talk about the classic Midway arcade game that it was based on.
Yeah.
They already have.
Yeah, that's also boring.
Yeah,
that game kinda sucks.
Yeah.
You smash buildings and you grab people and eat them.
Yeah.
You smash some more buildings.
Sometimes you eat toxic waste and it hurts.
Yeah.
That's my purge plan.
Go to the moon and one of them.
But yeah, so Cooper, as always, thanks so much.
Yeah.
Or I guess
as always.
Thanks so much for doing it. And
yeah.
I tell all the guests this, you're really welcome back in any week.
Yeah.
Wherever you want to come. It's not at all an imposition at all. At all an imposition.
That was a lot. Sounds a little, protesting.
Well, thanks for having me. I had fun talking about movies.
And I'll see you at the old coffee shop.
Yeah.
And Brayden, I hope things get better for you, man.
I'm sure they will.
I see them only getting worse before they start getting better.
Yeah.
Then you'll appreciate the better more.
Maybe.
There's your fortune cookie.
Yeah, maybe.
I just want some sleep so that, you know, again, painkillers, Aleve and beer are my substitutes for sleep these days. So.
But,
pretty healthy.
Yeah.
Why don't you eat some cottage cheese or something? What? I'll probably keep you alive.
I go to Harris Teeter and I pick up a head of lettuce and just eat that. You know.
Like Rampage.
Yeah.
You eat the food.
I think of that. I think more like Burger Time.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Way back then.
Yeah, you run around.
That's every day for me.
You made burgers. Yeah. You were a little chef with a top hat.
I've only ever played Digger and Web.
Digger.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about any of this, right?
From the 80s.
We'll save that for the next show.
Yeah.
I'd want to watch Rampage just so we could talk about The Rock's training regimen.
Yeah.
We could, yeah. We still could.
He's jacked in that. He's jacked. I dream that I look like that sometimes.
I know, yeah, you're telling me, man.
Yeah.
Mr. Jack
guy. What is that?
We won't get into it.
You and Chloe, the Rock, I'm sorry you got stuck.
It's okay.
MRI.
It's all right.
Sorry that happened.
Happens.
Hope your day gets a little bit better. But, yeah, so, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Bye.